Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your host, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
Big time card coming up this weekend. Really looking forward to it. In the main event, we have Dominic Reyes taking on the ever-talented Czech Republic native Jiří Procházka. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CraigAllenFNP. To my left, to your right, we have Matt Allen. As always, at MattAllenFNP on the respective socials. Matt, we had a great UFC card last weekend. One of the best cards we've had in a long time. But when we look ahead to this weekend's fight night, there are so many good fights littered across the card.
It really is one of those really underrated cards. You look at the top, Dominic Reyes, Jiří Procházka. That's a fight that anyone can really get excited for. Two top 205-pounders. But then when you just look up and down the rest of the card, Sean Strickland, Christoph Jocko. That's a fight I'm really looking forward to. And then, of course, in the co-main event, you have Cub Swanson, just one of those all-action, kind of all-time brawler types against Giga Dikadze from Kings MMA. I can't wait for this card.
I mean, Giga, with the Giga kick, you always have to watch out for it, but a great fight card. We're going to preview it top to bottom, but we're going to throw it over to our fight of the night screen, because like I said, it's hard to miss on some of these ones, and you're going to want to check them out. So let's throw it on over to the fight of the night screen, as always, presented by Manscaped. And when we're talking about a possible fight of the night, we have to look no further than the co-main event. We hate to cherry pick with fight night picks on some of those higher fights that are on the card. But Cub Swanson, I mean, coming in here, two-fight win streak, Giga Dikadze looking very, very impressive. Now, albeit, the level of talent's been a little bit different between these two guys. For Giga Dikadze, last time out, short-notice opponent in Jamie Simmons. And for Cub Swanson, an interesting fight against Daniel Pineda. Long time off between fights, major ACL surgery. And he looked pretty good after getting his legs chopped down for a while.
He really did. And if we get that same version of Cub Swanson in this fight, it should be absolute fireworks. Because you know what Giga brings to the cage. One of the best pure strikers really in MMA. And I do feel comfortable saying that. And Cub Swanson, like, think back to the Duho Choi fight, the Jeremy Stephens fights. Like, there's so many classic Cub Swanson fights. And I really do think that this co-main event could result in one of those classic Cub Swanson affairs.
Really good fight in that one. And then when we switch it over and we focus on the middleweight division, we have Sean Strickland taking on Christoph Jocko. And for both of these guys, you kind of look at their overall body of work. Is it 205? Is it 170? Is it 185? For Sean Strickland, his last time out, he took a catchweight against Brendan Allen, and he blew the doors off him. And for Christoph Jocko, coming in here, a three-fight win streak, he was a guy that a lot of people had just kind of written off. And now all of a sudden, back in the win streak, going strong. His last time out, a big one over Eric Anders. So riding the momentum into this fight. Stylistically, I love it, though, because it should produce fireworks on the feet.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I'm as excited for this fight as I am for the co-main or the main event, because we have two guys who, at their core, are very technical strikers. But when they do get hit, they can kind of just bite down on their mouthpiece and walk forward. So I really do think that this fight's going to be the one that we're all talking about in Sunday.
Couple of great fights. And as always, the fight of the night screen presented to you by Manscaped. Check them out, manscaped.com. Use promo code FNP. You're going to get 20% off and free shipping. Just free up for another 3 months. That's half a year, Manscaped, Matt. And it's because of the fans like you out there checking out the site. Love these two fights. Okay. But listen, it's a great card, and we got a lot to talk about. And what a big time card it is coming up this weekend. Of course, we have fellow Canadian KB Buller making a second time out, taking on Andreas Michailidis. But overall, awesome card. You've got wrestler on wrestler in the Merab Dvalishvili fight. He's taking on Cody Stamann. So much to look forward to. Make sure you check out the website. It's fightnightpicks.com. We've got great articles and different things that you can't find on the YouTubes. We just added Ian Wind. Ian's doing great work with the written content. Joshua Hart over there as well. You can find write-ups of the interviews as well as the podcast on the site. You can also find out the shop at fightnightpicks.com. We get the baseball jerseys, the Under Armour caps, the MLG jerseys. And Matt's got one of those Under Armour t-shirts right there as well.
Good,
so all
stuff.
Sorts of great stuff on the site. It's fightnightpicks.com. We have a big card and a lot to talk about this week. I'm really looking forward to it. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. As we always say, let's get into it. Big time make or break fight at featherweight this weekend. We have cool hand Luke Sanders looking to get the win, taking on Brazil's Felipe Claras. Matt, this is a really weird one, and I'm going to go through the chain of events. So if you have a look at it, Luke Sanders was supposed to fight Jurrie Newsome. Jurrie's out. Felipe Claras was supposed to be taking on Damon Jackson. He's out. So now these two guys meet. And for Luke Sanders, his last time out, it was a weird one at 140 pounds. He took on Nate Maness. And in that fight, he decided that, yeah, I'm pretty good at jiu-jitsu, and yeah, I haven't fought in a long time due to injury, but I'm going to go in there and become a power puncher. And he threw a lot of single shots, a lot of power shots. He rocked Maness at one point, and then he got rocked, and then he got finished. And it really is what it is. And if you look at Luke Sanders, we have to kind of break the fourth wall here, Matt, because Luke Sanders is really your bugaboo. And I understand you have a really hard time getting a read on him, like I had a hard time getting a read on Damari Carroll. Is he a good player?
I don't know.
He came to the Raptors. They forked over a ton of money. So you just assume, wow, Damari Carroll, impact player. And then you look at it because he's known for his defense, but his player efficiency rating's lower than average. So it's like, at the end of the day, how good is he really? Luke Sanders, the Damari Carroll of MMA. Because you look at the wins in his last five fights. Henan Barrow, who was way over the hill. And Patrick Williams, 3 years ago. So for Luke Sanders, it's really tricky. He's a killer, be killed fighter. He's a grappler mostly, but he gets submitted.
No, he's not. That's the thing. Luke Sanders isn't a grappler. I've sat here listening to you call him a grappler for far too long. Because Luke Sanders is much more a boxer than he is a grappler, and especially in MMA. When you look at the success that he tends to have in MMA, it's always with the hands. He does not have great jiu-jitsu, and his wrestling's pretty much non-existent. Let's just call it how it is. When Luke Sanders loses a fight, it's because he gets taken down and submitted. And you can say, oh, it's due to poor fight IQ. You can say, oh, it's due to poor takedown defense. He just has bad both. He doesn't have great takedown defense. He doesn't have great fight IQ. So I don't know why I've been calling him a grappler, because he really just is a boxer in MMA, and that's all he is, unfortunately. He has a very limited skill set, and it is kind of weird because you do look at his picture on Tapology. He's been around since the Strikeforce days. This isn't a guy who's new to MMA, although he only does have 17 fights. This is a guy who has been fighting for an extended period of time, but he has not been able to evolve with the sport. People go back to when Conor fought Dustin and how Conor was inactive, so he hasn't really been able to evolve with the calf kick. Luke Sanders hasn't even got a calf kick. He hasn't got anything other than just his pure boxing. Now, he does have a decent straight right. If he does time you off the jab, he can put you down with it. Even go back to the Henan Barrow fight. Now, the one issue I do have, even when the Henan Barrow fight is, Luke Sanders does not have great defensive boxing. He only really has good offensive fighting. So it's really concerning. You have a guy who tends to get hit a lot in his fights. When he does get hit, gets dropped, doesn't have great takedown defense, and when he does get taken down, tends to get submitted.
And that's why this is a great matchup, because for Felipe Claris, what's his huge Achilles heel? What's his wrestling? His wrestling's not all that great. He's a Muay Thai practitioner, former Jungle Fights champ. And since he's been with UFC, it's a 1-2 record. And you look at it, he gets beaten by Geraldo de Freitas. And you might think, okay, well, how good's Geraldo really? But if you look at the scorecards, 30-27s, 130-26. Okay, well, that's not all that great. So then he goes out there and he takes on Domingo Plarte. He beats him by split decision. And then he really pulled back the curtain on that one, and 10 of 12 total MMA media panelists over at MMA Decision scored it for Plarte. Two scored it for Claris. And then you look at Claris' last fight. He took on a really tough out, and I was kind of surprised that that was the matchup that they went with. But he took on Montel Jackson, and he got taken down over and over and over again. You have a look at the scores, 30-26, 30-26, 30-27. So for Claris, De Freitas, probably on the lower end. Plarte, probably on the lower end. Montel Jackson, we know how good he is. He's just one of those guys that needs to kind of get moving and have more fights, stay active. And Montel Jackson really has a good future. So for Felipe Claris, it is kind of tricky, because if you did see him fight with Jungle Fights, you did see him on the regional scene in South America. Really crisp striking and incredibly aggressive. And I think that's going to be the key to this fight, because for Luke Sanders, we saw him his last time out. Did he really throw a ton in combinations? Not so much. It was more just power shot, power shot, power shot. And the trouble for him was, as soon as it got into the pocket, that's when Maness was able to start to land. So for this fight, it is really interesting. Again, Luke Sanders, with all of that experience, you look at some of the names that he's faced too in the past, and they're big names, like Henan Barrow. Greatest bantamweight of all time? I don't know.
But no.
But you look at the losses. I mean, Andre Sukumtoth finished him. Yuri Alcantara, where I say grappler, that's why I bring it in. Because that was just a weird finishing sequence and a weird fight. Before that, he finished Maximo Blanco. That probably felt pretty good getting the sub win in that one. So we got Luke Sanders. We got Felipe Claris, the primary strikers. The grappling's not insane. The one other thing I do have for Luke Sanders, training at a fight ready for this one, so you do have the Hunter Azures of the world. You're going to have the Cejudos and the Pitbulls if they happen to stop by there. Luke Sanders, though, long in the tooth for the division, too.
Luke Sanders is not the fighter that I thought he was. And listen, we all get it wrong sometimes, but I gotta be honest, if he's gonna win another fight in the UFC, it's going to be this fight, because I don't think either guy is UFC quality. There, I said it. I really don't think either guy has that big of a ceiling, because even if you go back to the Kolaris fight against Montel Jackson, and yes, Montel Jackson's a good fighter, he didn't just get taken down. Like, he got dominated in the striking of that fight, too. He got dropped in that fight. Like, it wasn't just the fact that he didn't have the wrestling. He didn't have the striking. He didn't really know how to deal with the pressure of Jackson either. Now, half that story is I'm sure he was so worried about the wrestling of Jackson that that is going to open up some of his striking. But with Luke Sanders, if he can at least get it in tight and throw straight shots down the middle, he's going to be able to get from point A to point B faster than Kolaris is. Can Kolaris outlast Luke Sanders? I have no doubt that he can, because I believe, honestly, about 98% of the fighters on the roster can probably outlast Luke Sanders. But I do think if Sanders can at least be accurate in the early going of this fight and put enough damage on Kolaris to the point where Kolaris will be a diminished version of himself in that second and third round, I think this is a winnable fight for Luke Sanders. Now, on the flip side, the one thing about Sanders is you appreciate his aggression, although it does cost him in fights. He does get hit because of it. But the one thing I know about Luke Sanders is that he can get cracked and come back in a fight, and he can get cracked and keep on moving forward. Now, yes, it is detrimental to his game sometimes, but I don't think a fighter like Felipe Kolaris is a fighter who's going to be able to capitalize on those holes of Luke Sanders. I hate to do it because he's cost me so many times, but I think I'm picking Luke Sanders in this fight.
So if we have a look at the odds, I was kind of surprised. Felipe Kolaris right now, one of the bigger movers and shakers, he opened a plus 170. He's plus 126 at best fight odds. And if you have a look at Luke Sanders, open a minus 200. He's a minus 152. Now, Matt, the Tapology votes are the part that we like to save for the end because we haven't seen them. And out of 788 total votes, 71% Sanders, 80% say he's going to win by decision. The one thing that bothered me, and again, he was off for a long time due to injuries between his last two fights. Like I said, the Nate Maness fight, and before that, he had the win over Henan Barao. It was 2019 in February, all the way to November of 2020. And he had a fight booked in between against Chris Gutierrez. He had the fight booked against Damon Jackson for this one, so I flip-flopped. Sanders, it was in for Jurny Newsome, and originally Kolaris was supposed to take on Newsome, vice versa. But in this fight, it is tricky because you got the fans going with Sanders, you got the gamblers going with Kolaris, or it seems like that's the way it's been moving this week. The one thing I didn't like about Luke Sanders in his last fight,
One thing, we just talked for about 8 minutes about a lot of things that we don't like
about Luke
Sanders.
There's one major thing, getting hit in the pocket, and there was one exchange close to the end of the first round where he got lazy. They kind of got close to the fence, Maness hits him, and then Sanders just kind of like walks away, and Maness slams him and hammers him right in the face one more time. So for Sanders, it's almost like a fight IQ thing every now and again. For Felipe Kolaris, not that I love him all that much, but I do like his striking, as long as he can just up his output. If he goes Tyron Woodley against Vicente Luque, Felipe Kolaris all day. So I'm going to slightly side with Kolaris.
The one thing I will say is, fight IQ is one of the few things that, it is hard to look at it in one fight and use it as an isolated situation. Like, I think that fight IQ is one of the few things you can improve between fight camps. That is all I'll say.
All right, Matt, we're going to agree to disagree.
We will.
I'm going to go with Kolaris. You're going to go with Sanders. But all that means is, honestly, not that confident in the pick. This is a tricky, tricky fight.
This should be on Tuesday Night Contender Series.
And Luke Sanders being a minus 200 favorite is insane. Minus 150, minus 160. I don't know. But yeah, I'm going Kolaris. You're going Sanders. Really looking forward to this fight card. We got a great main event. Dominic Reyes taking on Jiří Procházka at the top. Let's keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Really interesting fight coming up this weekend at middleweight. We have Greece's The Spartan. Listen, one of two Spartans on this card. Andreas Mihailidis taking on the Bengal, KB Buller. Matt, if Canadians were looking for a hopeful at middleweight to go up there to do what George St. Pierre was able to do to beat Michael Bisping, KB Buller was that next hopeful.
GSP?
And in his last fight, he came in on short notice. And it should be said, for both of these guys, they were able to forego their bookings on Dana White's Contender Series to come into the UFC on short notice. For KB Buller, he drew Tom Breez. For Andreas Mihailidis, he drew Modestus Bukauskas, and he had to pop up a weight class to take the fight. He did have a little bit of success in that fight. He was able to strike a little bit. The kicks were interesting. And then right at the end, in the last 7 or 8 seconds, he goes for a double leg takedown. He commits to it a la, I don't know, Ryan Spann every time he goes for a double leg. Gut elbowed. Didn't really have a great conversation with Dan Mulvihetti. Fell outside of the cage. Fight's over due to TKO. But for Andreas Mihailidis, if you look at it in the overall body of work, he's a European BJJ champion. He's a three-time kickboxing champion as well. Very well-rounded pedigree. Are his takedowns all the best, notwithstanding that last fight? They're all right, but he can grind, he can strike, he can really do it all. And if you want a great fight for Andreas Mihailidis, if you want to go back and see one that's a lot of fun, the Marcel Fortuna fight that he was able to win with Titan FC back in 2019, really impressive one, great finish. And again, you talk about the kicks, one of his strong suits. For KB Buller, he's a guy coming out of Shea Bears MMA, Hayabusa Training Center up in Alberta. He's a main training partner and just overall pal of one Tanner Bozer. And from KB Buller, we went back, and this is one of those things that kind of bugged me, because on the broadcast for Buller Breeze, they kind of did the old, there's not a lot of fight tape out there. Well, we spent the $5.99 and the $6.99 to watch KB Buller's fights with Unified, and there you would have seen him fight Matt Dwyer, UFC vet, had a few fights, ended up winning one in the UFC, and you go back and watch it, kind of sloppy. I mean, the guy has a Taekwondo base, and his striking is fairly crisp. His takedown defense is incredibly porous. And once he gets on the back, not that great. And when he fought Matt Dwyer, it was more a question of, okay, well, how good's Matt Dwyer's conditioning? Because he looked tired. And really, by the end of it, so did Buller. It was a hard-fought fight. It was a good one. And the other thing about KB Buller is, if you look at his overall body of work, it's the big layoff at one point. I mean, he started fighting in 2012. He took a fight in 2013, and then he didn't fight again until 2018. And while he was active and he was picking up first-round finishes, 4-8 the opponent, 13-12, 16-13, and then Matt Dwyer, 11-5. That was a decision win back in 2019. It was a five-round main event. Then he had fights booked against Jordan Williams, who's in the UFC now, Bruno Oliveira on Contender Series, Tom Breeze, and then Tom Breeze again. They moved it around, and he had that long time off, and he got beat by one of Matt's most unfavored shots, and it's one that I pick on all the time. It's the Trevin Giles special. It was the power jab. And then he just kind of fell down, and Breeze capitalized, and that was it.
Now, there's just so much to talk about in this fight, but there's so little to talk about, really. Because for KB Buller, he's like if Zabit fought at 145, and I don't mean like, hey, if Zabit weighed 185 pounds. Like, if 145 pounds Zabit fought at 185, stylistically, they would be similar. KB Buller, he throws a lot of those showy kicks, but my issue is he doesn't land a lot of them. And that really is my problem with KB Buller. He's one of those fighters, and I don't really know what category to loop him into, because when I think about spinning shit fighters, to quote Nick Diaz, I think of like Edson Barboza. But I think about fighters that actually land those techniques. When you watch Buller, he does have some of that showiness to his striking, but he really lands those strikes with a lot of authority. It's one of those like, wow, he just missed a spinning back kick. It was cool, but did it land and do any damage? No, it just made him more tired as a result. And for Mihailidis, I just think he's the more well-rounded mixed martial artist at the end of the day. Does he have the wrestling? It's not great, but he can use that, and he does actively use that in MMA, which is one thing that Buller's going to really struggle with. I thought in the Buller-Breeze fight, Breeze's best path to victory would be, take down KB Buller, use that jiu-jitsu, use your ground and pound. I'm sure he could have done that if the fight did go past 2 minutes in the first round, but Breeze really did just land one jab. Buller was off balance, because that's the one thing about Buller's striking, too. He does have that kind of weird shift to his hips, almost like Thiago Santos, and he keeps his hands very low as a result. And since his hands are low, he is able to get hit by big shots. And not that Tom Breeze is the biggest striker in the world, but if Tom Breeze is able to put you down on the feet, then I worry about what a guy like Mihailidis is going to be able to do. Because you talk about his kicks, just overall his combinations and his punches as well, I just think are a lot more damaging than any technique KB Buller has. So a lot of this breakdown just comes down to me asking myself, what does KB Buller do better than Andreas Mihailidis? Not really much at the end of the day, so it's really hard to side with Buller in this fight.
I mean, he switches stances.
He does.
I don't know. I have a look at this too, and for Mihailidis, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, he's supposed to take on Antonio Ahoyo at the end of last year, back in November. Ended up, he had to withdraw. And again, for KB Buller, this is his first booking since the Tom Breeze fight. He's booked a couple of different times with Bruno Oliveira on Contender Series, and he got the short notice call-up to go to the big show. So it is tricky. Again, who has the better wrestling? I don't know. Neither guy, really. And the one thing that I don't really love about Mihailidis, if I'm going to nitpick, he holds his hands really high, but he can get backed up. And if you read Sean Bitter's preview over on Cage Side Press to welcome in Andreas Mihailidis, he's a 7.5-minute fighter. And if you fight into the second half of a fight, he can kind of tail off a little bit. So both of these guys are fairly quick workers. Again, for Buller, the 5-round fight against Matt Dwyer, it goes to decision. But if you go back and watch it, after like the second round, into the second round, it gets pretty sloppy as well.
You know, there's sometimes fights where we say, hey, both guys' stocks kind of rose after that. Honestly, the Dwyer fight for KB Buller is one of those fights where you look at it at the end and it's like, he won, but then you just kind of look at everything. Okay, so he beat Matt Dwyer, who's not in his prime. It's not really UFC Matt Dwyer. Was he able to finish him? Well, no, he went five rounds. Did he look good? He looked good for about 2.5 of them, and then it did taper off. It just, there's not a lot of positives, really, when I try to look long-term for KB Buller.
Well, we'll have to see what happens, but if you look at the odds, KB Buller went from a plus 155 to a plus 199 over on Best Fight Odds. If you look at it for Andreas Mihailidis, he went from a minus 180 to a minus 248. And Matt, the part that the fans love the most, we're going to look at the Tapology votes. Out of 901 total predictions, 75% with Mihailidis, 79% have him to win by knockout. For the 25% that have Buller, 48% by decision, 31% by knockout. Is there a path to victory there? Sure. I mean, if KB Buller goes out there and really starts to attack with his own kicks, if he's able to move quite well, because he does. He might not have the best output, but he does switch his stances quite well, and you talked about it. Fairly happy hips, so maybe out of that, he's going to be able to defend some of the takedowns. I just don't see it here. Andreas Mihailidis is one of those guys that, even though he lost to Bukauskas up a weight class, and even though he's into his 30s, I like him for the parts and parcels of his game, so I am going to go with Greece's Andreas Mihailidis in this fight.
I don't know if it gave it away, just kind of the whole breakdown up until him now, but no, I do agree. I like Mihailidis. Just at the end of the day, he just does everything a little bit better. And even when you look at KB Buller's strengths, I still think Mihailidis outshines him in those areas. So at the end of the day, I've got to go with Mihailidis.
Maybe the Bengal can outstrike the Spartan, but for both of us, we've got Andreas Mihailidis to get the win. Really looking forward to our main event, Matt. We have Jiří Procházka, the former Ryzen light heavyweight champ, taking on the uncrowned champ at one point, Dominic Reyes. Really looking forward to that fight. Make sure you keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Really interesting fight at strawweight, Matt. We have Thailand's Loma Lukbunmi taking on Sam Page, Sam Hughes. And for Sam Hughes, her debut didn't go all that well, but it was on incredibly short notice. She was replacing Angela Hill, taking on Tisha Torres. Tisha Torres was on a tidy little losing streak. She'd lost a number of fights in a row against very, very good competition. So the step to Angela Hill made a lot of sense. But with Hill out of the fight and Sam Hughes in, it was kind of interesting, because if you looked at it, in her few fights coming into it, she had a win with LFA. She beat Danielle Hindley. It was good. Hindley wasn't the greatest level of competition. Before that, a submission loss to Vanessa Demopoulos. And if you go back and watch that fight, Sam Hughes was having a ton of success in the first round or two. And then after that, she kind of gets caught in the classic Vanessa Demopoulos triangle between my feet, and it never works out. Now, it did for Lupi Godinez, but it didn't for Sam Hughes. Both of them in the UFC. Sam lost her fight to Tisha Torres, and I'll take it to my grave that Lupi beat Jessica Penne, but that doesn't matter here, Matt. Because for Sam Hughes, a cardio queen of sorts in MMA, if you look at it, and I had to go back through the tape to figure out how to pronounce it properly, but at Wofford, she was a track and field star and a cross country star, and you know exactly what you're going to get of Sam Hughes. Did she want to quit in her last fight? No. Did blood pool up inside of her eye and her coach made the decision to stop it? Yeah, and it was a great decision by the coach. Doctors and physicians alike all agreed, good job by the coach. So for Sam Hughes, she comes off of that loss to Tisha Torres, and now you're taking on, well, a very good striker in Loma Lukbunmi. And for Loma, her last fight really just continues to age well. She beat Jinyu Fry, and in that fight, did she have the best performance? I don't know, but she did win it, and she won it halfway convincingly. Before that, if you look at the overall body of work in the UFC, she beat Alexandra Albu, who's in the UFC video game for some reason.
Very strange career if you ever want to just go on a weird Tapology search, but either way.
Albu and then Angela Hill, you lose the decision there. And I got caught, and a lot of people were upset with me when I said Angela Hill is going to out Muay Thai, the Muay Thai champ, who pretty much grew up in a Muay Thai gym. It happened. But the problem
is, does your arm ever get tired from patting yourself on the back from that?
Loma Lukbunmi isn't really a strawweight. That's the thing. She's very, very small for the division. She's more so an atomweight, but you got to shoot your shot when you get the opportunity. Coming out of Tiger Muay Thai with the Hickman brothers, and if you look at it through the years and through the Instagram, a close training partner of one King, Casey O'Neill, it's now in the UFC at 125. So all this to say, it is an interesting matchup. Sam Hughes, she's got a great jab. She can throw decent volume. She can throw power, back you up to the fence, and really start to land. And if she's able to take you down, she is quite adept on the ground. Was it to her detriment against a really tough out in Demopoulos? It was. But that's pretty much the case for Sam Hughes. For Loma Lookbanmi, very, very good striker. And her takedown defense isn't awful.
I wouldn't say it is that bad. Again, for someone who's been striking the majority of their life, I actually think Loma Lookbanmi's defensive grappling is probably ahead of where it should be. And I do think it's something that improves fight in and fight out. Because at the end of the day, she still only is 25 years old. And when you've been growing up primarily as a striker, you're going to learn all those other facets of your game at a rapid pace. So I do think Loma Lookbanmi is still a learning mixed martial artist and is still getting better fight in and fight out. But this is kind of one of those classic UFC fights, isn't it? You have that one fighter who on short notice had to fight someone in the top 15. You know they're not good enough to fight someone in the top 15. So it's like, here's someone outside the top 15 who still has respect in the division, I'd say. They're not just like a UFC newcomer or someone coming immediately off Contender Series. It's not maybe one of the most established names, but again, still a good name in Loma Lookbanmi. So here it goes. How good are you, Sam Hughes? If you can't beat Loma, then this is probably it for you in the UFC. But if you are able to get a win over Lookbanmi, it really proves a lot, because Lookbanmi, like you had mentioned, not just world-class striking, but her defensive grappling is good enough that if you can beat her, it shows that you're going to be able to take down those other strikers in that division, where if you do have to fight, maybe not Tisha Torres in the future, who has great wrestling of her own, but maybe you fight an Angela Hill, and we've seen that she's a great striker, but we've seen wrestling be a bit of an Achilles heel. I'm not saying that tomorrow Sam Hughes is going to beat Angela Hill. I'm just saying that a win over Loma Lookbanmi kind of sets that career path into motion. My issue for Sam Hughes is on the feet, she's hittable, to be quite honest, and she doesn't really react to forward pressure or damage all that well. She is great going forward, but she is the one kind of being the bully, for lack of a better term, in the cage. But when she is the one going backwards, she can get pieced up. And for Hughes, it's just her inability to exit on an angle. She doesn't really back up and go to the left or back up and go to the right and the reset her footwork. She just kind of backs up when she is accepting damage or when her opponent is moving forward with a combination. And with someone like Lookbanmi, who can throw one or two strikes just to kind of hide that third strike and then use their third strike for power, those aren't things that I love when I'm looking at Sam Hughes. Now, I do think, like you had said, Hughes is the better wrestling. She is the better cardio out of these two fighters. So she can really impose her will, use her height, and what I assume just is a size advantage in this fight to really wear on Lookbanmi, especially early on. I do think Sam Hughes can win a decision in this fight, but for me, this fight's really just going to come down to who is the one moving forward. Because if Lookbanmi can get Sam Hughes up against the cage, maybe not in a clinch, but just get her against the cage to where she can start to land a combination, she can start to land volume, well, Loma Lookbanmi can hit pretty hard, and those shots are going to start adding up as this fight goes on. Whereas if Sam Hughes can be the one pressing Lookbanmi up against the fence, dirty boxing, making this an ugly fight, then Sam Hughes does have a path to victory, and that's why this is a pretty interesting fight.
I was really surprised when I looked at the odds. So Loma Lookbanmi open a -310 favorite. She's -379 at this point. For Sam Hughes, open a +260 or thereabouts. She's at a +289 right now. And if you have a look at the Tapology votes, holy smokes, 949 of them, 88% Lookbanmi, 85% by decision. And I have to go out there again. In that Sam Hughes fight against Demopoulos, it was a 30-26 going into the fourth round. Sam Hughes was taking over. Now, the reason one was a 10-8, there was an illegal strike at 1 point, but still, that's a credible enough performance in a 3-round fight against the name that you kind of know and love, I guess I should say. She's been on the big stage for a while, Demopoulos has. It's an interesting fight. It's tricky, again, for Loma Lookbanmi, last time out, Jinyu Frye, you look at the scores, 3-30-27s, 129-28. If she can keep Sam Hughes off of her, and she can at least start to land a combination, I do think Loma Lookbanmi should be able to win, but that line does scare me away.
No, I do agree. I like Lookbanmi in this fight. I just feel like if the fight's on the inside, she can not only land with a higher volume, but just with more power too. And I do think her takedown defense will be good enough to where if Hughes is going for takedowns, it's just going to result more of a clinch exchange more than anything else. It probably won't result in Lookbanmi getting taken down to the mat. I will say that Sam Hughes has a path to victory, but no, I will also side with Loma Lookbanmi in this fight, but I would definitely leave it off my card with those odds.
Matt, people don't like to hear that, but we're just being honest. We're both going with Thailand's Loma Lookbanmi to get the win, and it is a very interesting fight. We got a great card coming up. Our co-main event, Cub Swanson taking on one really tough out in Giga Chikadze. In the main event, you have Dominic Reyes and Yuri Prochazka. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. Big time fight at featherweight. We have Kai Kamaka III, the Fighting Hawaiian, taking on Downtown TJ Brown. And Matt, we have a great interview on the channel from our own JHK with Kai Kamaka, and really interesting developments. If I give you the Coles notes, it's cheating, but he He's made the move from Hawaii to Vegas. And is it the 9th island? Is it the 10th island? What is Toronto even? I don't know. But he's made the move to Extreme Couture. And you want to talk about a wealth of training partners there. Getting the chance to work with Mads Brunel and Jeremy Kennedy, Bellator's own former UFC vets, but guys with really high ceilings. And I know, listen, Jeremy didn't win his last fight, but Adam Borch is a great fighter. And you look at it too, I mean, Boston Solomon as well as Dan Ige, a couple of guys that he also trains with there. He really credits kind of the overall body of work he's been able to put at the gym with some of the improvements he's been able to make to his game. And he was able to go to Ruka Sport here not that long ago and get the chance to train with Chito Vera ahead of his last fight, as well as the one and only BJ Penn, who he looks up to as a mentor. So for Kai Kamaka III coming into this fight, he had a rough time out his last time, and he talked about it as much with JHK, but yeah, he fought JSP, Jonathan Pierce, who's also featured on this card, who looked absolutely terrible in his debut, and in the first round, Kai looked pretty good. I mean, his boxing was going pretty good, everything was working, and then in the second round, JSP decided to wrestle him, and he beat the brakes off him, and he finished him. So for Kai Kamaka III, that halted the win streak. For TJ Brown, he's coming in here on a two-fight losing streak. He spent a little bit of time at Westside MMA. He's been training with Bryce Mitchell, primary training partner there, but we also saw Dakota Bush spending some time. He just had his UFC debut against Austin Hubbard. We've also seen him again, Glory Fitness and MMA. You're going to see a lot of big names there. And who's the biggest guy at Glory right now? I don't know. James Krause, who are we going to go with? Tim Elliott? We going to go with
Smith?
Julian Marquez? All kinds of names that have spent time at Glory MMA, and it seems like they continue to grow. And for TJ Brown, what do we know about him? This guy is a submission threat, and listen, it's kill or be killed. We saw it in the fight against Jordan Griffin, where he pretty much just wrestled himself into exhaustion, and Jordan Griffin got him. And then in his last fight, he goes out there, he misses weight, he fights Danny Chavez, and did he win the third round? Probably. I mean, it was close, but he got totally outpieced in the first two rounds. And Chavez was mad. I mean, Brown lost 20% of his purse. And if you're only making 10, 12 grand, that's a lot of money. So for Brown, coming in here hungry, hasn't won a fight in UFC out of two of them. For Kai Kamaka, he won his debut against Tony Kelly, and he lost that fight against Jonathan Pierce. Got to be weird to see Pierce in the fighter hotel and walking into the Apex facility. But I'm really interested to get your thoughts on this fight because Kamaka, fairly well-rounded. TJ Brown, you know exactly what you're going to get. I like it.
So with Kai Kamaka, it's kind of weird because I put him in this like Impa Kasanganai category where you look at them and you go, okay, you're great at knocking people unconscious, right? Then you look at the record and it's like, wait, you win all of your fights by decision. It is kind of odd because normally when you have a fighter who is that heavily muscled, who is a primary striker, they're tender going to, or they will put people down and they will put them away. But Kai Kamaka, it's odd. It's almost like he has knocked down but not knocked out power. Now, I'm not always saying that's a bad thing because honestly, he is a reserved fighter and he's not a fighter who I'm always worried about. Like you kind of mentioned with TJ Brown, where if he is wrestling, it can almost be a bit of an Achilles heel where if he's having success with the wrestling, he might just go to that pond over and over and over again and he'll get tired due to it. With Kamaka, even if he has his opponent hurt, he will stay reserved. Now, I would like to see him burn his gas tank maybe a little bit more to get some people out of there because for Kamaka, he can struggle, especially with wrestlers, and that's really what this fight is going to come down to. Can TJ Brown out-wrestle Kai Kamaka until his cardio fails him? Now, I think Kai Kamaka, with the great training partners at Extreme Couture, it's a fairly easy fighter to game plan for if you're fighting TJ Brown. You kind of know what he's going to come at you with. Now, is it going to be tricky if he does get you to the mat? Yes, it will be, but I do think Kamaka, with his wealth of training partners, and just his overall decent takedown defense. Now, I don't think it's great, and especially the Jonathan Pierce fight is a weird one, and you kind of alluded to it. I know we're going to talk a lot more about Pierce in a bit, but Pierce, I just don't really know what he is. I know he looked awful against Joe Lozon, who was on his way out of the UFC, and I know he looked like a world beater against Kai Kamaka.
In the second round.
Exactly, in the second round, but still, Pierce is just one of those unknown commodities for me that I don't have a great read on, so just by definition, I don't have the best read on Kai Kamaka either, but honestly, I do think this fight really is just going to come down to the wrestling. If Brown can get Kamaka to the mat, though, I have no doubt that Brown is the much superior grappler once he gets to the mat. I don't think he will run into that Jordan Griffin issue to where if he is tired, Kamaka's this massive submission threat, especially off of his back. I do think if Brown could just keep this fight up against the cage, and again, people hate it when I say it, and I don't like saying it either. either. Make this a somewhat boring fight if he can just have that grinding style. Kind of like what we saw Joe Selecki use against Jim Miller. Now, I'm not saying he's going to secure as many takedowns as Selecki did, but you don't have to make the fight exciting just to win. And it might not do the best for your popularity, but all people care about at the end of the day is the W or the L on your record. And I do think if Brown can, again, slow this fight down, he will be able to get that win.
Matt, I said this a while ago, and it's really funny because you look at some of these fighters and they've got like the prepackaged meals and they're shredded and everything's going all that great, like Norma Dumont over on the Instagrams, and then yikes, missing weight tremendously. But TJ Brown, it looks like he's actually invested a little bit into the strength and conditioning, and hopefully he's able to make weight and it's not an issue, because he's going to be the way bigger fighter in this one. Like, Kai Kamaka used to fight at bantamweight. He's had his last four or five fights up at featherweight, but he's not the biggest guy for the division. And TJ Brown, he's not small, but he's not, like, the biggest guy. It's an interesting clash there. And again, for me, I look at Kai Kamaka. I mean, he was a minus 305 in that fight against Jonathan Pierce. And you worry about how bad he struggled with the wrestling. And it was just rinse and repeat out of the takedowns from Jonathan Pierce, who, again, kind of tough to get a read because of the Lozon fight and then the way he looked against Kamaka. But I can see Kamaka having a little bit of success on the feet, but not to the extent that Danny Chavez had. So if we have a look at the odds, Kamaka opened a minus 225. He's a minus 160 right now. TJ Brown opened a plus 190. He's now a plus 132 or thereabouts on best fight odds. Best part of it, we get to look at the Tapology votes. And out of 918, 85% with Kamaka, 87% by decision. Maybe you think he's going to have one of those Tony Kelly type performances, but it's tricky.
I'm going to side, I guess I'm going to go against the Tapology voters and against the odds. I actually like TJ Brown's chances in this fight, and it does come down to that wrestling. I just think if he's able to get the takedown, and if he's able to get on top of Kamaka, it's going to be a tough ask for Kamaka just to get back up to his feet without getting submitted. And with TJ Brown, I do really think it is only going to take that one takedown in the center of the cage to really get enough A, damage off, or B, get to a decent enough position to really invoke his submission game. And I do think TJ Brown can win this fight as the underdog.
TJ Brown, he's let me down time and time again, just twice, but he's let me down both times. And listen, I'm gonna go with him this time. I really still feel like TJ Brown can make somewhat of an impact. You might look at the record, what is it, 14-8? It's not all that impressive, but if you look at the way that he's able to get things done, the way he's able to control on the ground, as long as he can kind of reserve his gas tank. And again, we did see him get that third round against Danny Chavez, who we saw had a gas tank problem in his last fight in the third round. But I still do like TJ Brown in this one. He's going to be the heavier guy on top. And if Kamaka gets his back up against the cage or up against the mat, it could be a big issue. So Matt, both of us going with the underdog, downtown TJ Brown to get the win. It's a really interesting fight. And you got to check out that interview with JHK and Kai Kamaka III. I'll link it. It's on the channel. Matt, we got a great card. Co-main event, Cub Swanson taking on Giga Chikadze in this division. In the main event, you have Yuri Prochazka making a second time out, taking on Dominic Reyes in the main event. Wow. Big time fights. Keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. I'm going to start this video off by letting you in on a little secret. If you've ever talked to Javier Mendez, he's probably going to tell you how great Khabib Nurmagomedov is, and Daniel Cormier, and Luke Rockhold. But none of those guys hold a candle to our fighter coming up on the left-hand side of the screen, Gabriel Benitez, because this, by Javier Mendez's own account, is the hardest kicker he's ever held pads for. Matt, for Gabriel Benitez, you look at the overall body of work. He was on a two-fight losing streak going into his last one against guitar hero Justin James. Got stars in his eyes. And in that fight, Matt, we saw one of the most disgusting knees I've ever seen in all of MMA. And for Gabriel Benitez, this is a guy that's kind of flip-flop between 55, 45. And if you look at the last five fights that he's had, or the last number of fights, two performance bonuses. One time, he just absolutely finished your Combate lightweight champ at one point, Humberto Bandanai. And then that last time out against Justin James, he got that bonus money. He's taking on JSP, and I don't know if it's an ode to Canada's GSP. I really don't. But the guy's out of Tennessee, and what I can tell you is that an aging Joe Lozon finished him. And then he came out in his last fight, and he didn't look great in the first round against Kai Kamaka. But in the second round, he looked like an absolute world beater. For Jonathan Pierce, didn't really have the greatest level of competition coming up. But, hey, he got the wins you want to see. He got the finishes you want to see. He made it to the dance. For Mowgli, he's been with UFC for a time and a half. He's racked up a number of wins. He has a much higher level of competition on the record. And again, we talk about it. The AKA connection for Jonathan Pierce, the connection to Fight Ready MMA. And if you look through the Instagrams, and we go through it, but Santino DeFranco really putting together a great crew there. Obviously, we saw a really big win for, well, a number of their fighters last weekend. That seemed to be the real push. But Tracy Cortez, one of the fighters recently that picked up a big win over Justine Kish. But again, the training partners, Hunter Azure, Bobby Moffitt, Jakar Close, and then if you want to throw in Henry Corrales, maybe the Pitbull brothers to round things out. That's great to see for Jonathan Pierce training out of Arizona.
Oh, it really will be. Now, this fight's going to come down to a few things. And I'm going to kind of quote Teddy Atlas and say that it's going to come down to geography. Because for Gabriel Benitez, he's really good at judging distance. Now, he's really good on the outside and he's really good on the inside. Some guys were those mid-range strikers. Like if Kelvin Gastelum was shrunk down to a 145er and could somehow fight in the pocket and also fire back at him, that's the kind of fighter who Gabriel Benitez has trouble with. Even go back to the Sadiq Youssef fight. At range, Benitez was having quite a bit of success. His jab was working well. He's got great kicks from long distance. But once Youssef was able to get his way into the pocket, land with power, that's when you saw Benitez start to struggle. And even the same thing in the Omar Morales fight. Omar was holding him up against the cage a little bit too. But you could tell, at range, Benitez was having success. But really up close, or in that weird kind of mid-range, Benitez does struggle. And for Pierce, it really is odd. I don't know if his fight against Joe Lozon is one of those things that I'm just always kind of going to hold against him. Because that version of Joe Lozon got finished by Chris Grootsmacher in the first round. And Chris Grootsmacher is not really a name that you hear us talk about a lot, and that's for good reason. It's not like Chris Grootsmacher is the elite of the elite. And the fact that Joe Lozon had lost to him already and then finished Jonathan Pierce just isn't a great sign knowing where Lozon was in his career. Do I like Pierce's wrestling? Yes, I do, but Gabriel Benitez can go out there and just beat a primary wrestler. Now, Pierce is a lot more than just that primary wrestler, but if I'm asking myself, does Pierce have any chance at range in this fight? Well, no, not really, because Gabriel Benitez at range against most people, really at featherweight, is going to be a problem. I like his leg kicks, and I really like his body kicks too. I know the body knee was the highlight of his last fight, but if you just go back and watch the majority of his career, that body kick of Gabriel Benitez does really remind you of another guy, aka Luke Rockhold. They both share that really powerful back power kick, and it's something that really does bother his opponents if he's able to land consistently, and that's something that he can put money in the bank with his leg kick and his body kick early on in the fight. And if he can damage Pierce enough just with those two techniques, that's going to diminish Pierce to the point where Pierce isn't going to want to try to close the distance, because every time he's closing the distance to try to wrestle, he's meeting power that Benitez is throwing back at him. So honestly, stylistically, this is a really hard fight for Jonathan Pierce to win at the end of the day.
For Gabriel Benitez, you bring up the comparison to Luke Rockhold, and I'll bring a comparison to one half in the main event. You look at Dominic Reyes, he always has to reset. He always has to be from southpaw, but when he fires out that kick to the body or to the leg, that's when Reyes has the most success. Reyes, a little bit better with the boxing, though. He does kind of just throw a left straight, and when it lands, does it ever. But for Benitez, the boxing, yeah, the kickboxing, yeah. And you bring everything together, Gabriel Benitez is going to have a good night out there. The weird thing about him, though, I don't like his takedown defense percentage over his career. You have a look at it, it's 56%. And then if you wait it, so Clay Collard, who looked absolutely unstoppable last week against Anthony Pettis, went 6 of 11 for his takedowns at UFC 188. Benitez still won that fight, and all three judges scored at 30-27. And then if you look at the other fight, Enrique Barzola at UFC 211 took him down 9 of 15 times. Barzola, pretty slick at the wrestling. Clay Collard, pretty slick with the boxing, but apparently can wrestle sometimes. But the trouble is, yeah, when Benitez gets taken down, usually pops back up to his feet, so he's never really down on the mat for all that long. But for Jonathan Pierce, I would expect he's probably going to be trying to take him down in this fight. Yeah. When we look at the odds for this one, Benitez opened a minus 150 favorite. He's roughly a minus 288 right now. And for Pierce, he opened a plus 130. He's a plus 169 or thereabouts. So I was kind of surprised when I looked at it, especially for Jonathan Pierce. And I should correct myself for Benitez, minus 208, not minus 288. My notes are terrible. But what I will give you, over on the Tapologies, total votes, 912 of them so far, 79% Benitez, 63% by knockout. For the 21% that have Pierce to win, 47% by knockout. So the fans are anticipating somebody's going to get finished. The odds are kind of weird because they opened with Benitez the favorite. The line dropped significantly at the start. It's remained fairly even throughout the week and the last number of days. Now, Matt, I know you've been a big Benitez supporter in the past, and it was kind of tough to get a good read on Jonathan Pierce based on the regional competition, but also the loss to Lozon kind of weighs heavy in your mind. So it is a tough judgment to make, but overall, what's your take?
So I'm not going to Yanni the Greek this and be like, hey, put the mortgage on Gabriel Benitez by first round knockout. But what I will say is I do like Benitez quite a bit in this fight. Just stylistically, it's a tough fight for Jonathan Pierce because at the end of the day, Pierce really only does have his wrestling to rely on. And what Benitez has gotten really good at is he knows the guys aren't going to want to strike with him on the outside, so they're going to want to meet him on the inside and try to wrestle with him. He's got great uppercuts, he's got great knees, he's just got great things that can catch wrestlers on their way in. So I do think if Pierce is starting to struggle on the outside, and if he does start reaching for his takedowns and not striking his way in the smart way, I do think he's going to get caught with a big shot and probably going to go down. So I am going to pick Gabriel Benitez.
It's a really tricky one because again, Benitez finally moved back down to featherweight. He had success there before, but again, if you have a look at the losing streak, good names, but again, Sadiq Youssef made it all the way to a Kona main event slot not that long ago. Omar Morales at 55 was good.
Honestly, if they fought again at 145, I'm not saying Gabriel would win because then I'd really look like a homer, but it would be a much more competitive fight, I would
say. You don't want to be a homer. Come on, buddy. No, come on.
It would be a much more competitive fight, though, because that was one of those weird fights where it's like, okay, well, you're both 145ers. Why are we doing this at 155? And no, Omar wasn't until he was, but still, it's just weird that Omar now fights at 145, but the two of them fought at 155.
Well, we'll see what happens, but yeah, I do like Gabriel Benitez again if he invests in the kicks, and as long as his shin doesn't just totally get, I don't know, messed up like it did in that Morales fight. We'll see what happens, but I do like Gabriel Benitez in this fight. It's a great one. It should be an all-action type of fight, and we have plenty of great fights. Our co-main event, also at 145 pounds, you have Cub Swanson taking on the really tough out in Giga Chikadze. In the main event, Dominic Reyes and the man himself, Jiří Procházka. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Big time fight at strawweight, Matt. We have the UFC debut of Luana Pinheiro, and I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, this is a gal that has a great judo background. Brazilian jiu-jitsu, purple belt, and both of these ladies are, but a black belt in judo. And if you've ever gone back and watched Pinheiro's, any of her regional fights, any of the fights over with Brave, very, very impressive. 8-1 overall body of work. She's on a tidy little 6-fight win streak. That's also a finish streak, and all of those first round finishes. And listen, if you look at the level of competition, it might not be all that good. Was Frosto all that good over on Contender Series? No, not really. I'll be totally honest with you. If you look at it, Stephanie Frosto, maybe not one of the best fighters at 8-6. It was a little bit of a setup fight for Pinheiro, but if you look at the way she was able to get the win, holy smoke. She has massive hooks when she goes to close distance. She has very, very good striking. She's always circling away from the power side. She has good movement on the feet. And she does the old level change feints quite often because she can, because she has that judo background. Now, the one thing that I can be critical about with Pinheiro is the fact that her top control and her positional control, not all that good. She'll give up position. She'll jump from guard into full mount. And then she'll lose mount against lower competition. If you do look at it again, with the Brave fights, she did fight in Colombia at Brave 26. She got a win over Yasmile Araque, and that was a Venezuelan fighter who was 0-2 at the time. Ugh. Pretty cool. She beat Helen Harper, who was 4-2. To find that one, I had to have a Fight TV Plus account, so you're paying your $50 a year. You get to watch the fight. In that one, she goes ham the whole fight, and she picks up a huge win. It was the first women's fight in Bahrain. Neat stuff, eh, Matt?
There you go.
She's taking on the Canadian fighter in Randa Marcos. And we were a little bit worried with Randa in her last number of fights. I remember going back, and if you look at it, 2020 just wasn't all that good to her. She lost to Amanda Ribas. She lost to Mackenzie Dern. And she lost to Kanako Murata, the former strawweight champ, over with Invicta. And I remember going into some of those fights saying, well, Randa, she cross trains because she's out of Windsor, but she goes to Detroit and she kind of just goes across the bridge. And I'm going to train at all these different spots. And the pandemic, I don't know if that's the reason why she had so many issues, but I'm sure it played a part. For this one, she's actually training out of Travis Luter's BJJ down in Texas. She had a little bit of a trip. I saw it training over with Bob Perez, getting some of that striking work in. So maybe she's the new Derek Lewis of the division. I don't know. But for Randa Marcos, at least a little bit of consistency in the training camp in the States for this one. But the weird thing with Marcos, since she came into the UFC in 2014, the fight against Jessica Penne, which at the time was one of the craziest women's fights.
A title eliminator.
We had ever seen. It was win one, lose one, until the draw against a really tough out Marina Rodriguez. But still, win one, lose one, all the way till early 2020. Randa Markos now in a 3-fight losing streak, and in her last two. So considering Kanako Murata and then this fight against Pinheiro, two debuting fighters. She lost to Murata, who in her own right, good wrestler, pretty well-rounded. Now you get another debuting fighter. You're an underdog in this fight. And listen, Matt, it's tricky for Randa Markos here.
So I grew up being a big Lob City Clippers fan. They were my favorite team, but just growing up a basketball fan, you appreciated what they did, right? DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, just throwing down lobs from Chris Paul. They were a really exciting team. But that team, like all great things, one day they start to fade. And those star players kind of think about where they are now. DeAndre Jordan, well, he starts for a team, but he can barely run up and down the floor. Blake Griffin plays on that same team, can barely dunk the basketball anymore. Eventually, Father Time does catch up to you, and athleticism is going to start to slow down. We used to always commend Randa Markos because every single time that she did fight, it didn't matter what the result was, she did add a new wrinkle to her game. She was always that wrestler, but then for a period of time, her striking seemed to make a bit of an improvement. Her jiu-jitsu was looking better. She was going out there and submitting fighters, not just going out there and holding them down. My issue with Randa Markos as of late, and yes, I'm sure just inconsistency in her training has played into this, but she just hasn't looked very good lately, and I don't think it's just her skill set. I do think that just athletically, she has taken a bit of a step back. She's not able to just go out there and power double people like she used to, because one thing I always think about when I'm breaking down a fight here at the cat's out of the bag is, what does a fighter do? What is their card in their hand that they can just always pull out? That, oh, when I'm in trouble, what can I resort to? Well, Randa Markos, when nothing else would work, she could just go out there and do a power double leg and hopefully try to get into a scramble and end up on top. But going into the Murata fight, I thought that Randa Markos, okay, she's going to wrestle her. She's going to be able to grapple her. That's not what we saw. And maybe a full camp Randa or maybe a consistent camp Randa would have won that fight. But the fact that we're not just seeing her go out there and not secure takedowns, we're seeing her getting taken down. We're not just seeing her going out there and not being able to grapple as effectively and not passing guard. She's the one who's getting out grappled when she's the one on the bottom. I'm just concerned that Randa Markos at this stage of her career, she's not on the front nine. If anything, she's on the back nine getting ready to go to the clubhouse. I just don't think Randa Markos is that same fighter who fought Juliana Pena all that time ago. And is there anything against that? No, she's 35 years old at 115 pounds. We normally talk about this with like welterweight fighters and lightweight fighters. Like, hey, when you're like 33, 34, you're kind of starting to go out of your prime. Normally when fighters are bantamweight, flyweight, strawweights, you're going to age at a much rapid pace. So honestly, it's kind of just insane that Randa Markos has been able to just last this long in this sport, because she has been one of those pioneers, and it does suck to say. I just feel like this point in her career, the sport has somewhat passed by Randa Markos.
Now, you might look at the record. If you're on the UFC site, it's probably 10-11-1. If you look everywhere else, it's 10-10-1, because there's that one fight over on The Ultimate Fighter, and it was a 3-rounder against Rose Namajunas. But let's talk about the losses. Kish, Namajunas, Penne. At the time, Penne got the title shot. Kovalkiewicz, then we're talking Courtney Casey, Alexa Grasso, Nina Nunes, the draw against Rodriguez, I'll lump that one in there. Claudia Gadelha, where, listen, it was a decent fight. Hibas, Dern, Murata. Forget about Murata, because I think she does have a future, and I think she could get a ranking next to her name, but everybody else on that list, pretty good fighter. And then you look at the wins. I mean, Angela Hill, Yoder, Lima, Esparza, that was a good win at the time. It was a close fight, but it's tricky because Randa Markos has taken on a really, really good level of competition. If you like her wrestling and her top pressure, maybe you like her against somebody like Luana Pinheiro. Because again, from everything that I watched and all those fights for Pinheiro coming up, she does just get a little bit wild and a little bit excited. Mind you, she gets all of these first round finishes. She has really, really good footwork. She has good striking for somebody whose base is jiu-jitsu and judo. And she's another one of those fighters, and I had to write it down, the Rousey effect. And she'll talk about it in her own right, but I get into this because Ronda Rousey, and I was into judo, and now I'm here. It's tough for Randa Markos, though. Again, I like the move to Travis Luter's BJJ. Do I like Kevin Holland there anymore? No, I do not. But for Randa Markos, I think that's a decent move and a little bit of consistency in your camp. So you might like Markos, but again, she's a plus 165 underdog. She opened there. She's now a plus 144 thereabouts on best fight odds. For Luana Pinheiro, she opened a minus 194. She's a minus 174. And if we look at the Tapology votes, just to get an idea of the fan vote, You have 949 total votes, 82% Pinedo, 59% by decision, 22% by submission, 14% by knockout. Ferranda, out of all the losses, decision, armbar, decision, majority of them are by decision. So maybe you really like Pinedo in this fight. What are you thinking here?
Brandon Marcos is older than Kyle Lowry at the end of the day, and Kyle Lowry's looked at as like the greatest Raptor of all time. He's made 6 All-Star games. He's won a title. Like, he's accomplished so many great things in his career. We're talking about Brandon Marcos, who isn't even in the rankings, and she is at this stage in her career. It's just, it's not a great time to be a Brandon Marcos fan or supporter. It's just, she is at this point in her career where it is kind of over the hill, if you will. I think she could go out there and maybe out-wrestle Pinedo and have one of those classic Brandon Marcos performances, and maybe does turn back the clock and wins this fight with her wrestling. I just think with Luana, I think her defensive grappling is good enough to keep Randa off of her. And at this point, I don't think you need us to tell you, Randa Marcos' striking isn't very good and it hasn't really progressed much. She still has that like weird stiff stance. And it is weird because when people fight Randa Marcos, they don't throw a lot of output because they are worried about the takedown. So if she does get involved in these weird kind of mirror matches where not a lot's being done on the feet, watch out for that. This could result in kind of a snoozer that way. But I do think Luana is the much more developed striker. So that if it does become one of those weird kind of we're both looking in the mirror fights, I just think Luana can land first and land more often.
When you're going to the clubhouse between the front nine and the back nine, do you usually stop in? Like, I like a bucket of Colorado Kool-Aids. Like, that's usually my go-to.
Oh, yeah, every now and then.
You got to go with that. But, Matt, we're both going with Brazil's Luana Pinedo in this fight. Coming out of Nova Lignao, you talk about the breadth of training partners there as well. And at the time, and I don't know if it's still a thing, but it was back in the summer. It was in her other fights that I saw with Brave. Mateus Nicolau in the corner. They are romantically involved. So how neat is that? Both of us going with Brazil's Luana Pinedo to get the win. Love the fight. Interesting one. Unfortunate that maybe a Canadian loses.
True.
But we'll see what happens. We got a great card coming up. Your main event, you have the wild man from the Czech Republic, now known as Chechia, taking on one really tough out in Dominic Reyes. Love the fight. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Couple of Muay Thai fighters at flyweight, Matt. We have Pollyanna Battaglio taking on Luana Carolina. And Matt, Luana Carolina at one point in her career was supposed to fight Wu Yanan. Wu Yanan withdrew due to injury. Then they were rebooked. And then Luana Carolina withdrew because she had a spinal fracture and had to spend a month in bed. And listen, if you're a Mike Tyson fan, you know the old clip. But you look at it for Luana Carolina, and her last win was just about 2 years ago. She picked up a big one over, yikes, zombie girl Priscilla Cachoeira. And in that fight, she looked great. Overall, 230-26 is 129-27. But for Luana Carolina, if you paid any attention and you had the sound up, sometimes on pay-per-view broadcasts, they can get a little weird. They can get a little bit carried away. They sway more for one fighter than the other. But the problem was, and if Dominic Cruz says it, then I'm going to listen to it, especially if it's not just underhooks. He talked about the fact that Luana Carolina really leaves her head on the center line. It could get her in trouble. In that fight, it didn't. Her next fight out, she has a long layoff, the spinal injury, what have you. And she fights Ariane Lipsky. And Ariane Lipsky was like the prospect that never was. She came in from KSW. She didn't look all that good. And then she fought Luana Carolina and got her in one of the most disgusting leg locks I've seen in a long time. And so we haven't seen Luana Carolina in some time. So it's been, 8 months? All right. Pollyanna Battaglio, a fighter who, I don't know. Like, I really just don't know. I look at the UFC run. She beat Pearl Gonzalez 3.5 years ago. Then she beats Siri Kondo, and she looked great. She really brings in, again, the Muay Thai aspect of her game, she starts kicking to the body, to the legs, and she's aggressive. She's a good fighter. She got submitted by Cynthia Calvillo, who missed weight. Like, it was just a weird fight. Then she beats, Princess Tiger? Lauren Murphy? That's a good win.
Not Lauren Murphy. Lauren Murphy's a good fighter.
Lauren M. Princess Tiger probably gave it away. And then she fought Jillian Robertson. And in that fight, round one, it's like, okay, we're feeling it out. Jillian goes to take her down. Pollyanna stuffs the takedowns. But then Pollyanna decides to push Jillian up against the fence. We're going to play this clinch game. It was kind of a weird first round, and then after that, it was all Jillian Robertson. So for Pollyanna Battaglio, not the greatest ground game. After the first round, the takedown defense goes right out the window. But the striking's there. For Luana Carolina, again, I said a Muay Thai background, 2-time state champ. She's a 2-time Brazilian national Muay Thai champ. And you look at it, she's got a little bit of a jiu-jitsu base as well. It's an interesting kind of clash here I like the matchmaking because it really kind of gives you a baseline as to where either fighter is really at. What's your take here?
It should be an interesting fight, but for Pollyanna Batello, I just don't really know what she does great. Because there was a time in her career where I was like, wait, she's better at grappling than striking, right? And I know I'm not right when I say that, but you never just really know what you're going to get fight in and fight out. I can go back to the Pearl Gonzalez fight. She basically won that fight just by defending takedowns against the cage and landing a couple more strikes per round. Batello's takedown defense, I wouldn't say it's Swiss cheese. Like, there's not holes completely through it, but it is not great. And I will push back on after the first round. I think she can defend takedowns against someone who doesn't have a wrestling background. I think if you have any kind of a wrestling background, you will be able to get to her. But if you are just kind of an MMA wrestler trying to use your wrestling, unless you are one of those top tier people who has at least a high school background, you're probably not going to be able to take her down. Because one thing she does do well at is she's got really strong hips up against the cage, and she is good at making her base very wide when she is up against the cage. It's not the most high level takedown defense you'll ever see, but it is just good solid fundamentals from somebody who we don't really look at Pollyanna and say, wow, we're going to compare her against the Tatiana Suarez's of this division. No, we're going to compare against the Luana Carolinas of this division. And really, this fight, if it's on the feet, I do think Batello can have success, because I'll compare her striking a little bit to Alex Oliveira's. Now, yes, that didn't turn out all that well for him last weekend, but just as a baseline, both very long-range strikers can use their jab, can use their straights to really keep distance, but also to damage their opponents. And the kick that she landed against Siri Kondo was a really, really nice body kick at the end of the day. It's one of those strikes that if it lands 10 times out of 10, does it put her down 10 times out of 10? Probably not, but it just was a well-executed technique. And it's something that she has in her back pocket. That left body kick, I know we just talked about Gabriel Benitez, so he's fresh in my mind. It doesn't have the power of a Benitez body kick, but it's something that she can throw out there just to keep the hands of Carolina busy. It's something that we don't really talk about it enough, I don't think, but it is something that a lot of kickboxers can do just to keep boxers' hands occupied. Think back to Robert Whittaker, Calvin Gastelum. Robert Whittaker just threw the head kick a lot of times. Now, did it land? Yes, but the big reason why he threw the right high kick was to keep Calvin Gastelum's left hand against his face. I can't really throw my punches if I'm always afraid a kick's going to be thrown in return, and I can't leave myself out of position defensively if I am worried about that kick. So that is something that most opponents of Batello have to focus on when they are in the cage with her, because that kick does have, I'd say, an uncommon amount of power for this division. For Carolina, at the end of the day, I do think if she can just be invested in those leg kicks early on, she can start to chop down Pollyanna, especially early on in this fight, because with that wide base of Pollyanna, that back leg, or that front leg, I should say, is wide open and very exposed to those front kicks. So I think if Luana can stay disciplined, and I know that is hard to say because really one of the fundamental issues with her game is she loses her head very high up, but if she can stay disciplined in her attack, whereas if she doesn't have the highest amount of volume so she doesn't burn herself out, but just stays consistent behind the jab, doesn't keep the fight at such a range where Batello can jump in and kind of prod her with some of those shots, but just keeps it at a comfortable range where she can always be the one pressuring in this fight, but not over committing to anything and risking a takedown. So I actually think Luana as an underdog isn't the worst pick on this card.
This feels like a weird trap card, because for Pollyanna Batello, opened up a minus 185. She's minus 243 average on best fight odds. I don't know who has that much confidence in Pollyanna Batello. And you look at it, she had a huge layoff between her last win, which was again, Mueller, yikes, 2 years ago, and then 6 months ago, she fought Jillian Robertson.
Lauren Murphy mops the floor with her.
That's a weird, maybe future title challenger. How scary is that? But you look at it, really long layoff from win to loss. And then if you look at it, the Siri Kondo fight was almost 3 years ago. If you look at it for Luana Carolina, her win over Priscilla Catchway at Old Zombie Girl, 1 year and 10 months ago. Matt, again, I said that was on a pay-per-view. I'm not even going to let you guess. I'm going to tell you. The fight that was after that was actually Clay Guida and BJ Penn.
A fight that I enjoyed more than I should have.
Yikes. Scary stuff. But again, the odds heavily in Batello's favor. And if you look at it over on Tapology, 891 votes, 84% Batello, 87% have her to win by decision. I look at this, and for Luana Carolina, she can get backed up. She can throw good kicks. She really likes to be in that plum clinch, which is also where Batello likes to be in, so it's kind of weird. I like Batello striking just a little bit more. I'm so scared of that line, though. Like, this is low-level flyweight fighting at its finest or lowest. So I don't love it all that much, but I will go with Battaglia ever so slightly.
So I don't know if we need like a Rodolfo Vieira alert right now, but I am going to ever so slightly pick Pollyanna in this fight.
You already said you were taking Carolina.
No. I think Carolina can have success on the outside if she does stick to the kick, but this is the thing with Battaglia. If she can get the fight to the mat, I just think her grappling skills are superior at the end of the day. If Ariana Lipsky, who's grappling I don't really think that highly of, is able to put Carolina in a submission like a knee bar and a vicious one like that, I don't think you need the highest grappling IQ to go out there and beat someone like Luana Carolina. I think if Battaglia somehow does get the takedown in this fight, whether she's able to drop her and get on top of her as a result due to that, or just out wrestle her, I think the grappling can actually be the area where Pollyanna excels the most at. So I am ever so slightly going to pick Pollyanna, but again, don't have the best read on this fight, or on either one of these fighters.
Matt going between the two and making up a new word, excels. I like it. Well, we're going to see who excels the most, but we're both ever so slightly going with Pollyanna Viana. No, I'm just kidding. It's Pollyanna Battaglia to get the win in this fight, Matt. It's an interesting card. We've got a lot of different divisions represented, but it seems primarily like the lower weight classes in the women's fights, as well as 145 and 205 up at the top. You've Dominic Reyes taking on Jiří Procházka. You're not going to want to miss that. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. At Fight Night Picks, we often talk about fights that are going to be a striker's paradise. And somewhere in Stillwater, Oklahoma, there's a fight fan that's as horny for this fight as a cougar on Christmas Eve, because we have a wrestler's paradise between a couple of streaky scramblers in Merab the Machine Dwashvili. No, it's not Burt Kreischer. Taking on the second Spartan to be featured on this card in Cody Stamann. Michigan's own, now fighting out of Las Vegas, representing Extreme Couture. And I found a very, very interesting, quotable, and interview from our own JHK, but with Sports Kita, and we won't discriminate. And in that, Cody Stamann was talking about Merab Dwashvili kind of peeping in at the PI as Cody Stamann was trying to get ready for this fight, and he was trying to spar at the PI. And the quotable was, and I will get it right and give them credit where credit is due, "I just don't think Merab kind of thinks anything of it. I just think he's kind of a squirrely little dude." So Merab, being squirrely and like Merab, just kind of trying to peep on the striking session that Cody Stamann was going to have.
Does Stamann realize they're the same size?
They are the same size. So when you call a little guy a little guy, it's just kind
of... A couple of short kings in this fight is what we're getting at. A
couple of little fellers. Now, Matt, when we look at this fight, though, for Cody Stamann, he's been at Extreme Couture for a very long time. We talked about Kai Kamaka making the move there, but the Dan Iges of the world, the Mads Burnells, the Jeremy Kennedys, you're going to get what you're going to get, but a lot of really good wrestle boxers down in those lower weight classes. Throw Justin Jeans in there as well. For Merab Dwashvili, I have to say this. He'll have Ray Longo in his corner. I'm assuming maybe he's going to have Aljamain Sterling in his corner. This is going to be his first fight without, "Come on, Merab!" Matt Serra in his corner. And I think that's actually going to play a big enough factor into it. I love the fight. Merab, out of his first 7 UFC fights, has 54 friggin' takedowns. Nobody else has come close to those numbers. For Cody Stamann, again, he is a wrestler, and that's primarily what he's going to use. He can strike to get into a clinch, to take you down, to try and stay on top of you. Merab is just going to throw caution to the wind. He's going to try and reserve his energy a little bit. He's an absolute cardio king, and if you go back and look at his last fight, between the second and third rounds, he's not really sucking wind all that much. He's standing up and getting instruction from his corner, so it'll be interesting to see how this fight goes. But I love the matchup. There's probably somebody at Oklahoma State that's excited because I mentioned Stillwater. It's actually a pretty cool town. I've been there one time, old Cowboy Corner. But overall, Matt, I love this fight. It should be a good one.
There's so many strikers at Bantamweight that are really happy that this fight got booked because these guys are both just a lot of contenders' kryptonite. Even Sean O'Malley, for instance. Like, I think Sean O'Malley's a really good fighter. I do. But Merab Dwashvili is a terrible matchup for him. And so is Cody Stamann, because both these guys, I'm not going to say they make fights boring. Okay, Cody Stamann makes fights boring. Let's just call it like it is. Now, he tried to fight in that Cody Stamann way against Jimmy Rivera, but it is interesting. When Cody Stamann was fighting, kind of, not lower level of competition, but just on his way up the rankings, that wrestling was good enough to get him wins, and he could just resort to his wrestling. I kind of mentioned how Like Carla Esparza, at the end of the day, when she panics, she wrestles. Cody Stamen, when he panics, he wrestles. And not just to the point where he's always panicking, nothing like that, but he just does wrestle a lot. When he does get into any trouble, the wrestling can normally get him out of whatever trouble he encounters. But as he is making his way up the rankings, you're encountering guys like Aljamain Sterling, who is like, okay, take me down. I really don't care. Once you take me down, that's where I'm at my best. And you did see Cody Stamen struggle in the grappling department when it did become more than just a wrestling match. And then go to Cody Stamen's fight against Jimmy Rivera. He tried to wrestle him. What's Jimmy Rivera really, really good at, though? He's a great wrestler, and I would say he's slightly more than just a wrestle boxer. He's a good striker, but he's a slightly more well-rounded striker, I would say, than Cody Stamen. He's a much faster guy, too, at the end of the day. And you could see Stamen started to struggle against guys who... they don't have different styles, and you ask yourself, okay, what does this guy's style look like against Stamen's? It was, how do you out Cody Stamen, Cody Stamen? You put him in there with a guy like Jimmy Rivera. Now, stylistically, is Dvalishvili and Jimmy Rivera, are they exact copies of each other? Well, no. Dvalishvili, much more offensive with his wrestling, whereas Rivera uses his more in a defensive manner. But on the feet, I'd say there's a few similarities between the two. Rivera, much more technically sound, don't get me wrong. But the thing with Dvalishvili is, he does have dangerous hands. Even go back to the Rafi and Stotts fight. Yeah, it was only 15 seconds, but like, that one punch put him completely out. And it was something from Dvalishvili that you don't always think of when you do think of Marab. When I think of Marab, honestly, the first thing I think of is Craig screaming, come on, Marab. And the second thing I think of are the immense amount of takedowns that he is able to get in the majority of his fights. I really thought that Brad Katona fight was going to be a tough one for Marab Dvalishvili. But he went out there and just absolutely mop the floor with a guy who I thought was a decent wrestler to begin with.
So in the Rafi and Stotts fight, that one spinning back fist, and he's done it since then in fights, and he does it so many times that sometimes it looks like he's gonna go up like a helicopter into the air. Like, he will spam that. He's coming in on a tidy little win streak. He beat Tarion Ware, who had the hardest strength of schedule you're ever gonna see. Brad Katona, Casey Kenny, Gustavo Lopez, and then John Dodson. And I think the best win out of all those is Casey Kenny, that he out-wrestled him and took him down. He did the same thing against Gustavo Lopez. The John Dodson fight, I went back and watched it a couple of times today, and it's weird because Dodson just didn't really do anything. Like, he didn't do the magic man. He wasn't really kind of throwing in combination. Yeah, they had that weird sequence going into the third round where they decided to both yell at each other to pump each other up, but it was weird. Marab didn't really do a whole lot either. He picked... his opponent up, and then John Dodson, as soon as he gets slammed down, Dodson would be pushing away, standing right back up, scurrying away like the little guy he is. So it's a weird fight, because again, for Cody Stamen, you talked about it. You look at the loss, okay, that's against Jimmy Rivera, it'll happen. Aljamain Sterling, almost 3 years ago. Then in the middle, the Song Yadong, where, listen, it was a close fight. Could you make a decision or an argument for either guy? Sure you could. The wins, Alejandro Perez, and then Brian Kelleher. That Kelleher was like the statement Cody Stamen performance, and I won't dwell on it for too long, but his brother just passed away. It was super emotional. Like, there probably wasn't a dry eye in the crowd. I don't want to make light of it, but Cody Stamen looked amazing in that fight. That's a great one. I know a lot of people, ride or die with the Georgian Marab, and listen, we have two Georgians on this card, just like we have two Canadians. We picked against the two Canadians earlier on. For Marab, he's coming in here a pretty big favorite. He opened up somewhere in the realm of a minus 140. He's all the way to a minus 246 at best fight odds. For Cody Stamen, open to plus 120. He's a plus 198 or thereabouts. Tapology votes, 1,019 total votes, 86% Marab, 91% by decision. Can Marab just grind and use the sambo that he has and the judo in his back pocket to get the win over the collegiate wrestler in Cody Stamen? It's a tricky fight. What do you think?
I think he can. I really do. And it's just the problem with Stamen. Even go back to the Yadong fight. I've never seen Cody Stamen win an exchange on the feet. And I don't really think that's an exaggeration. Go back to the Yadong fight. Song absolutely dominates him on the feet. The issue is, it's one of those weird fights where Stamen gets the takedowns, but he's not able to really secure much with the takedowns. He gets the takedown. He gets the top position. He's preventing Song from really teeing off on the feet and or going with his game plan. So he is still winning the fight, if you will, but it did remind me a lot of when Deron Wynn fought Darren Stewart, and it's like, okay, Wynn's getting the takedowns but not doing anything with them, and when they are on the feet, Stewart's actually hitting him and damaging him quite a bit. So my issue with Stamen is, if they're on the feet, do I think Stamen can at least jab and be competent enough, I'll say, to not get dropped and not get outstruck? Well, yeah, I think he's a sound enough defensive fighter for that, but my issue comes down to, when he's the one who's going to be asked to move forward and land really at all and use anything other than his wrestling as a way to move and really push Marab backwards, I just don't think Stamen has those secondary tools in his gas tank, or really in his toolbox. So I'm going to pick Merab Dvalishvili. It's not that I'm really that sold on Merab as like the future champ. I know a lot of people are kind of, you know, really saying that he could be like a Zabit where it's, he hasn't done all these things yet, but you just wait till he gets the opportunity. I don't know if Merab is going to be that top guy in this division. I just think 135 is such a shark tank right now that it's hard to really say any guy can go on and become the future champ. But for me, I do think Merab can do enough to get past Cody Stamen.
To quote Cody Stamen, I'm ever so slightly just going to go with that squirrely little guy in Merab Dvalishvili. And listen, again, the striking, is it totally there? Well, it doesn't really need to be because, again, he's so offensive. He's always pushing a pace on his opponents. Can he out-pressure Cody Stamen? That's going to be interesting. That remains to be seen this weekend. I think it's a tight fight. I don't really like the line on Merab, so I leave it off my card in all honesty, but I do love the fight. And Stillwater, maybe you're, I don't know, you're in Iowa. This is the fight for you. If you like Jared Rosholt fights, you're going to love this fight. So, Matt, we're both going with the Georgian, Merab Dvalishvili, to get the win. Let us know down below in the comments section who you're going with, because I can see it probably 50-50 in the comments, even though Tapology and the odds say otherwise. I bet there's a lot of people out there that have Stamen and a lot that are out there that have Dvalishvili. So let us know. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Three fight win streaks on the line at middleweight in a fight that I can get up for. We have Sean Strickland, Tarzan, and listen, do you like the song Tarzan Boy? Was it always Dustin Pedroia's walkout song? Yeah, it was. And for Tarzan, he's taking on Poland's Krzysztof Jocko. And if you look at it for both of these guys, quality wins. For Tarzan, it's been a while. I mean, for Sean Strickland, he was a guy that trained in the Pacific Northwest. He's now out of Kings MMA, but also he made the move from Kings to Syndicate. I threw it out there on the graphic. I know it was a really interesting interview that's here on the channel. If you missed it, check it out. I don't know how the guy's fight's going to go at the end of the week. But Tom Lawler, been training primarily out of Syndicate, and his main training partner was Sean Strickland to get ready for his fight that was supposed to be originally Jordan Johnson, now Antonio Carlos Jr. All that to say, good quality training partners at Syndicate for Sean Strickland. For Krzysztof Jocko, you look at the last three fights. I've always had a hard time trying to get a read on Krzysztof Jocko. Maybe it was inactivity. I don't know what it was. But he lost to Uriah Hall. He lost to Brad Tavares, both by finish. He beat Alan Amadovsky, a guy that just didn't perform all that well at all, but really performed at all in the UFC. So he wins there. He beats Makhachev Barrio by split decision. And then he beats Eric Anders by decision. It's like, okay, I can get behind Krzysztof Jocko. Like, he's starting to get things moving. Now he's taking on Sean Strickland. Both guys strikers, so you should like the fight, right?
Well, they are both strikers, but they're very different. They have very different methods of striking. Really, Jocko, he's an interesting fighter, and he was ranked at one point, so you do have to say, like, this was a ranked middleweight, like, not that long ago either. It was only 3 years ago. But the issue with Jocko was that he was so unique when he came into the UFC with his very kick-heavy attack, and it's almost like he relies on a heavy volume of kicks to win his fights, that it was pretty unique. But then at a certain point, not that tape got out and that the game plan's out on him, but if you can collapse that space and force him to become a boxer, you can just eliminate half of what makes his attack so really calculated and what's so unique. If you get rid of the kicks from Jocko's attack, you could really just force him to become a counter-striker on the outside. And if Sean Strickland can force a guy to become a counter-striker on the outside, he's probably just going to be able to out-counter-strike or just out-volume whatever they have. So this fight's really weird because it is two primary strikers, two guys who normally have really fun fights, but Sean Strickland, really his striking style is, and I hate to use this term because this is a one-sided, it is kind of the kryptonite for what Krzysztof Jocko at least tends to bring into the cage. What does Jocko do? He doesn't have great power in his hands, although he is a good striker. He's good at landing on his opponent and then exiting at angles. The issue is when you're fighting a guy like Sean Strickland, he's always coming at you with a very high level of volume and power behind his shots. So if you are just trying to move out of the way of his big shots, you don't have to worry about just the one punch power of Strickland. He's going to continue to march you down with his volume, and he is a fighter who, I guess I was kind of late to the Sean Strickland at 185 party, if I'm being honest, because his fighting against Brendan Allen, he just did a really good job. And I know Brendan Allen, his striking in that fight, it's taken a level up since that fight. I do think that's fair to say. But what he did in that fight, he defended the takedowns, which is what he had to do to beat Brendan Allen, and then just picked him apart as he came forward and as he went on the inside. So I saw not only the good striking side of Sean Strickland, Strickland. I saw the counter striking of Sean Strickland. So I know in my head, if he's moving backwards on Jocko, he's going to be able to land on him. And if he's moving forward, he's going to be able to land even more. I'm just finding it hard to find the areas where Jocko is going to have a lot of success. I think he's got leg kicks that are going to give Strickland issues. And I do think his jab will give Strickland issues to a certain point until he does start to get tired. And then Strickland might be able to march him down.
So for Strickland at 170, and you brought it up, I mean, that last fight was a catchweight at 195, and Strickland looks bodied up. And that's a weird thing. For Strickland, the three losses, Santiago Ponzinibbio by decision, Kamaru Usman by decision, Elize Uzelesky Dos Santos, and one of the most disgusting knockouts you're ever going to see. Then he beats Nordin Taleb in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. Beautiful Moncton. And then he has a really long layoff. He had an awful motorcycle accident. He was all sorts of broken up, and he had to take a lot of time off. He was originally supposed to be taking on Wellington Turman in the return, and he got Jack Marshman, the Welsh paratrooper. And in that fight,
beat the brakes.
Beat him up so bad, he wasn't taunting him at the end. Like, it was like, come on, let's throw down. And then they went at it in the third round, too, and he absolutely pieced him up. And then he fought Brennan Allen, and he pieced him up, too. And in the Marshman fight, I thought, geez, you know, maybe it's just in my mind. Maybe it's the injury. Strickland kind of looked a little boxy. Like, he was just kind of a little robotic. He looked great. He threw in volume, but kind of robotic. And then he fought Brennan Allen, and it kind of looked like the old Sean Strickland again. I get it. Like, he lost a kneecap, so there's that. But for Sean Strickland, he looked amazing his last two. Again, you don't want to take much away from Christoph Jocko because three-fight win streak, good level of competition, especially the last one over Eric Anders. But I do feel as well, Sean Strickland has some of those things. Now, the one way I could see Jocko winning, I want to lay it out for him. Again, you talk about it. With a guy that lost a kneecap, was in a bad accident.
I don't know if I...
Whip out the kicks. If Jocko can start early and be consistent with a lot of kicks and exiting on angles, maybe he's able to set himself up well to where he can start to really land, then land in combination against Strickland. I just do think that Strickland, is the sky the limit at 185? I don't know. But I do like what I saw, especially since he's come back in those last two performances. It looks like the Sean Strickland that we kind of knew and expected at 170.
So, Christoph Jocko got knocked out by Brad Tavares. And I know Brad Tavares' punching power. Is it good? Is it bad? At the end of the day, he doesn't have very many finishes. So, the fact that Jocko got finished by Brad Tavares, and Sean Strickland, honestly, stylistically, him and Tavares match up very well with each other. They're both very boxing-heavy fighters who have decent kicks, good defense, just pretty much everywhere. The only difference is, I'd say, Tavares is a little bit better at the offensive wrestling, really the defensive wrestling, but Strickland has more volume. And at the end of the day, if Tavares can eventually get you up against the cage and start to land with power, then Strickland will be able to do the same thing, only with volume, and then be able to land power shots into it. I think if Strickland is able to land body shots early, especially with his hands, look for that, he should be able to win his way to a nice decision.
We look at the odds match. Strickland open to minus 200 favorite. He's minus 256 or thereabouts. If we look at Christoph Jocko, open to plus 170, he's a plus 205. And over on Tapology, 1,013 total votes, 87% Strickland, 64% by decision. I see Sean Strickland winning this one. I'm going to go by decision, but yeah, I like Strickland.
Again, watch out for the leg kicks, especially if Jocko's able to land them early. I know only Alex Oliveira lost to Randy Brown over the weekend, and he lost to him in the first round. But you can't lie to me, because I know I was, and Craig was too. Those calf kicks that were landing early from Oliveira were making me nervous. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a similar fight where Jocko might look really good to start off, but once the pressure of Strickland does start to wear on Jocko, Strickland should be able to land a lot more often as this fight progresses. So no, I agree. I like Strickland as well.
Matt, both of us going with Sean Strickland. Tarzan to get the win. Really looking forward to the fight. We got a great card, so you're going to want to stick around. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Big time fight at 205 between a couple of primary strikers, and this really kind of previews our main event. Really looking forward to that fight. You got Reyes and Proaccia, but Ivan Kutselaba representing Moldova, taking on Dustin Jacoby, the former Glory kickboxer, the former UFC fighter. He had the long layoff, and then he came back, and he's looked great in his last two fights. Yes. Picked up a big win over Justin Ledet, a primary boxer, finished him, and then his last time out, picked up a narrow decision win over Max Grecian. Yes, he had the two knockdowns. Did Grecian look pretty good? Did I score for Grecian? Well, it doesn't matter now, because Dustin Jacoby won, but for Jacoby, very, very good striker, moving forwards, moving backwards, and if he's in a clinch position, you still favor Jacoby there. Is the wrestling an issue? It can be, but Grecian wasn't really able to do a whole lot with it in that fight, like I kind of thought that he would, and now Jacoby's taking on Ivan Kutselaba, and if you look at it in his last five fights, really weird level of competition. He gets a win over Gadjimirat Antigulov, finishes him. Then he loses to Glover Teixeira by submission. Did he look good early? Like everybody does against Glover Teixeira. Yeah, he did. And then he didn't. He beats Khalil Roundtree and finishes him. He loses to Ankalaev. But his head movement. But he was faking it. And then he goes out there and he loses to Ankalaev again. Somewhat predictably. But I get it. The fight fans didn't think so. But it happened again. So, for Kutsalaba, he has, and I'll do the air quotes, 2 TKO losses in his last 2 fights. The second one was pretty pronounced. He comes in against another striker in Dustin Jacoby. It's a weird fight. It really is, because it's like, okay, is Kutsalaba a top 15 fighter on his best day? And is he not on his worst day? Maybe. Is Dustin Jacoby a top 15 fighter? I don't know. I really don't.
Is Yil Kutsalaba just light heavyweights Mike Perry? It's just a question I'm going to throw out there. And I didn't hit Craig with that before.
If that's the answer, then Jacoby might run over him.
But you know what I mean? Like, it is a real question, because this is something we say about Mike Perry. Yes, he's known for the striking. He's known for the wild striking, the knockout power. But what is he decent at the end of the day? He's got decent wrestling, and if he used it more, he'd probably win more fights. It's almost like he's a lot like Yil Kutsalaba, who, wait, he's been wrestling for the majority of his life but doesn't use it in his fights. It doesn't make any sense to me, because that's a fact that they're going to hit you with as Yil walks out to the cage. This man's been wrestling since he was a child, but you would never think to see it in his fights. The only time that he has used his wrestling was in the Jared Cannonier fight, which, oddly enough, was a really good win for Kutsalaba, back on his record, a former fight of the night. But even in the win against Gadjimuran and Tegulov, you did get to see a little bit of the grappling side of Kutsalaba. Yes, did he try to go out there and take his head off in the first 30 seconds? Yes. Did that not work? Yes. Did Antigulov have a little bit of success? Well, yeah, he did. But the real thing that I care about in that fight was Antigulov got on top of Kutsalaba, and Kutsalaba ended via knockout in the first round. He was still able to get back up to his feet and show a certain level of defensive grappling where, yes, is he going to be able to get out from underneath Glover Teixeira? Well, no. But I think we've seen that pretty much every fighter in the UFC would have a really hard time getting out from underneath Glover Teixeira, so I can't fault Kutsalaba too much for that performance. I just gotta think at the end of the day, Kutsalaba's gonna be really happy he's not looking across and seeing Magomed Ankalaev in this fight, because Ankalaev, whatever you thought about the first stoppage, was he out on his feet, was he not? Stylistically, that fight was just a really bad matchup for Kutsalaba, because Kutsalaba, what's he good at? What would you say his black belt skills are? I would say his power is at a black belt level, if you will, and that's really it at the end of the day. So a guy who throws big looping shots is going to struggle against a very technical striker on the outside. Dustin Jacoby has some of those strikes and really some of those techniques that I do think will give Kutsalaba trouble, especially early on in this fight when they're both fresh, because that's the thing with Kutsalaba. I feel like his power is almost a bit of a curse at a certain point, where Paulo Costa, yes, he has big muscles, and yes, he's a power puncher and a knockout puncher. His technique's still pretty good at the end of the day. He can still throw good technique. He can still throw the wheel kicks and all those crazy wild things that you really don't expect from a guy of his size. Kutsalaba can't do any of that. I really think that he's a fighter who goes in there knowing how much power he has and really wants to demonstrate that. So if Kutsalaba comes into this fight just throwing those wild Mike Perry-esque bombs, I really do worry about him. So for Kutsalaba, fight in and fight out, I really do wonder just A, how good is his training situation, and B, how high is his fight IQ? Because really, everything about his career comes down to those two things. Because if Kutsalaba can get with a good camp that focuses, or at least gets him to focus a little bit more on the wrestling, gives him a tone down the aggression a little bit, and to do kind of like what we saw Justin Gaethje do in the second half of his career after he suffered his stoppage losses, then I do think Kutsalaba could get into that top 15 again, and I do think he could have that kind of Mike Perry butterfly effect where we do see the best version of his career. But if he goes out there and loses, and especially by stoppage to Dustin Jacoby, I do think he might fall into that Perry category where at the end of the day you have an exciting fighter, but that's about it.
If you look at Yuan Kutsalaba and his Instagrams, and if you look at Kamaru Usman last weekend, who did Usman have in his corner? Francis Ngannou. Who did Yuan Kutsalaba have on his Instagrams? Francis Ngannou. So, does that have any play here? No, it's just the fact that he's been training, getting ready for this one in Vegas. You like to see it. For Dustin Jacoby, a little bit better in terms of striking accuracy. You can kind of go by these numbers a little bit, but 46% compared to 39% for Kutsalaba. Bit of a higher work rate out of the Moldovan. And as far as takedowns are concerned, you've got Kutsalaba that's a little bit more, on average, used to taking people down. If we look at the odds for this fight, a little bit of a surprise. Kutsalaba open minus 140, down a little bit, minus 136. For Jacoby, open to plus 120, at about a plus 110. And if we have a look at the Tapology votes, the surprise to me is it's a surprise to you. 927 total votes, 66% Kutsalaba, 78% by knockout. For the 34% that I have Jacoby, 60% by knockout. Matt, what are you thinking here?
It's a weird fight, and honestly, I expected the Tapology votes to be much more skewed towards Kyuta Laba, just because he is kind of the fan favorite, if you will. Like, it's not that Dustin Jacoby's not a popular fighter, but Kyuta Laba does kind of have that weird, like, MMA myth around him, where still, if he does hit you with that power, and if he does walk across that cage and do that real intimidating, like, neck slice thing, if all those things fall into place, then Kyuta Laba can... I don't want to use the word he has star potential, but you know what I mean. Like, he's more than just an unranked 205er. He does have somewhat of a name. And I said this to you before this video started, where I feel like this could be one of those fights similar to Anthony Smith, Devin Clark, where it's like, really? You guys think this is the guy who I'm finally going to go down against? Like, Anthony Smith had just fought top levels of competition, and yes, he wasn't always beating them, but at a certain point, it's like, okay, I'm still better than these guys. I think Kyuta Laba is going to have one of those performances where it's like, okay, guys, I'm better than Dustin Jacoby. It's nothing against Jacoby, because I do think his technique and his style is going to be tough for Kyuta Laba. I think he is going to crack him, and I think he is going to maybe not hurt him, but at least force him to show a wrinkle that we haven't seen yet. So I am going to ever so slightly pick Ian Kyuta Laba, but I really don't know what to think about his career just moving forward, because if I'm saying you're like the light heavyweight Mike Perry, that really tells you guys a lot about the guy.
Technique usually beats power. I hate to bet against technique. I will ever so slightly go with power in this one. And it's a weird one, but again, if Kyuta Laba is able to mix in the takedowns, if he's able to really show his full game plan, if he's been training Extreme Couture, I do like all of those things for Kyuta Laba. So I'm ever so slightly going to edge him as well, but I'd really like to know what people are thinking down below in the comments section. Who are you going with? We're both ever so slightly going with Kyuta Laba to get the win. But if you're going with Jacoby, give us a good answer down below. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We got a great light heavyweight main event. Dominic Reyes taking on Jiří Procházka. So stick around for that. Like I said, keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. As we always say, let's get into it. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Gut Bush? You definitely do if you haven't tried the best products from our sponsor today. It's Manscaped. After using these life-changing products, you're going to want to join a Ballsack Beauty Contest. I'm looking out for you, too, because I also have an exclusive 20% off discount code. It's FNP at manscaped.com. You get 20% off and free shipping. Now, Matt, we've been repping Manscaped for the last 3 months. And listen, the people have been calling for it. Manscaped's been calling for it. It's another 3 months of Manscaped. And I love the products. And I love talking about my nuts in front of a large audience on the internet. And if you're like me, I like to shower shave. And it's been a thing. It's been a part of my routine since, well, it's been possible. But the trouble always used to be, I'd buy those big box brand department store shavers. And it's all metal. And then it rusts. And then you got rusty stuff nicking your nuts.
You don't want rusty nuts.
You don't want rusty nuts. So we get this Manscaped stuff and, you know, you open the box and are you apprehensive? Maybe not, but you look at it and it's like, okay, is this really going to do
the
deal?
You give it a bit of a sigh. I know I did. And it was one of those cases where I open it and you see the commercials and they're every other ad on YouTube and it's like, okay, I get it. But then you actually try the products and that's the crazy thing. You do hear all the hype and a lot of the time the hype doesn't work out. But no, these are one of those things where you talk about the shower and whatnot. The best part is that LED light. I live in not really a like dungeon of a basement apartment, but the lighting's not great in my bathroom. It really isn't. And that light really comes in handy.
The light does a good job, but listen, I mean, if you get the perfect package 3.0, it's going to come with the Essential Lawnmower 3.0, and it works great because it's waterproof. It really does a great job at trimming. It's the best trimmer to help you trim up the hedges, so they say, with advanced skin safe technology, because there is a ceramic edge blade, and that's the thing that really makes a big difference. And it's not just one of those things that you're going to buy, you're going to use it 4 or 5 times, you're going to chuck it. It's one of those things that's built to last. And one of the jokes always used to be with the campaign that they had, oh, you know, it's got a charging stand. I used to say, oh, it looks pretty good on your bathroom, but yeah, it looks pretty good on the vanity, and it actually works. It's functional stuff, and it's the stuff that you really want to use. Inside that perfect package, you're also going to find the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. You've heard me talk about this. It's like a salve. You put it on, you slap that stuff on, and it works good. They also have the Crop Reviver Ball Toner, and all you have to do, spritz a little bit of that on after the shower. You want to dry off first. I'll give you a little bit of a heads up. You spritz some of that on. You're going to have a great day. And if you're perusing their website, they also have the Refined Cologne. Now, I've sprayed this and we breathed it in. I do not recommend that. But what I will say is it is a nice, light, and refreshing smell. So it's a lot of great stuff. And if you pick up that perfect package or the performance package, you get 2 free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, it's a $35 value. Everybody needs a nice little toiletry bag. It also comes with the patented high performance reduced chafing Manscaped boxers. And the one other thing that I want to talk about, Matt, is the Weed Whacker. And the Weed Whacker works great because I have a nose hair problem.
A severe one at that.
And it does a really good job at trimming up the old nose here. So do yourself a favor. Always use the right tools for your bush trimming experience. Get 20% off and free shipping using the code FNP at manscaped.com. It's 20% off and free shipping. You support our sponsors, helps us, and we really appreciate it. So Matt, we got a lot of big time fights this weekend. As we always say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. We've been spending most of our lives living in a striker's paradise, Matt. In our co-main event this weekend, we have Cub Swanson taking on Giga Chikadze. And I absolutely love the matchup because for Giga Chikadze's last time out, he ended up with Jamie Simmons. And it wasn't the matchup that we thought he was going to get. There was talk of a ranked lightweight. There was talk of a top 10 ranked possible featherweight. Now all of a sudden he gets that call. And then it's weird what happened today because you had good fighters leaving the top 15 because of inactivity. But why is Yair Rodriguez still ranked? I'll never know. But Giga Chikadze, now ranked 14th. Cub Swanson, now ranked 15th. How neat is that? I won't go into it. But if you look at it for both of these guys, Chikadze on a tidy little win streak for Cub Swanson. He had lost, but then you look at some of the names. And I wrote them down, but you go through his overall body of work. He's fought the best level of competition for the longest time. And then even in his three last losses, let's go through them. Frankie Edgar, Renato Moicano, Shane Burgos loses by split decision. Then he beats Crone Gracie. That was a weird fight. Then he beats Daniel Pineda. And I'm going to throw it on over, Matt. YouTube community tab. I threw it over there today. I said, co-main event banger at featherweight. Who's getting the win? 68% of 700 votes right now have Chikadze to win. And to go through some of the comments, I mean, Wyatt Kenny said, Cub Swanson looked really good against Daniel Pineda. It won't be an easy fight for Giga. And people piled on. And other people said, Rafael Alvarez said, yo, make a vids for the upcoming fights. Rafael, we're doing it right now. But the point of it is, a lot of people are going with Giga Chikadze in the comments section. They're really kind of taking away from that Cub Swanson performance. In that first round, Daniel Pineda looked pretty good with the leg kicks. And then Cub Swanson's boxing started to come through, and a combination of the boxing, him kind of rocking Pineda, and Pineda's horrible gas tank were a great reason for Cub Swanson to get a win there.
You're too hard on Daniel Pineda for that fight, and we've never talked about this until now, but I'm airing that laundry. Sometimes fighters don't look bad, it's just the other guy looks good. And fighting is a two-person sport where sometimes you're going to win and sometimes you're going to lose. That night, Cub Swanson just looked good. I wish I could have a more in-depth analysis, but what did he do? He defended the takedown attempts of Daniel Pineda. What did he force Daniel Pineda to do? Boxing the outside with him. What's almost impossible to beat Cub Swanson at a mixed martial arts fight? Boxing on the outside with him. Now, we have seen people at featherweight have success against him, and it is weird because he doesn't really lose to a certain type of fighter. Cub Swanson has trouble with certain body types. And when I look at Giga Chikadze, he kind of is that body type that Cub Swanson has struggled with in the past. Guys who have range on him who are primary strikers. Think of the Max Holloways of the world. Think of even the Renato Moicanos. Moicano's not some dangerous heavy-handed striker, but just think about that fight. Drops Cub Swanson with a very fast jab, and that was really the key to that fight. It was the speed, not the power. And then once it's on the mat, he chokes out Cub Swanson pretty quick. They're going to tell you a lot about how Cub Swanson has a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and I'm sure he does. But there's going to be We're going to have to start differentiating jiu-jitsu black belts. You have guys who actually use it in their fights and who actively practice their jiu-jitsu because it's a real part of their MMA game plan. It's something that they go to. And then you have guys who have Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts, but it's just something that they have, and it's not really a skill that they keep on refining. I don't look at Cub Swanson, and the first thing, I don't really think about his black belt when I think about Cub Swanson. On the mat, I've seen him just get outclassed by too many guys at this point to really put a lot of sway and put a lot of confidence into his black belt. Cub Swanson has good scrambles off the bottom, but my issue is that even on top, look at his fight with Duho Choi. He's in full mount on Duho Choi, who doesn't have some crazy grappling background, and Duho Choi just bucks him off. If you have a jiu-jitsu black belt against a guy who has no grappling background whatsoever and you're in full mount, you should not be able to get bucked off so easily by someone who I'm not going to call Duho Choi some kind of amateur, but still, in the grappling department, he's not nearly as a refined grappler as Cub Swanson is supposed to be, so I'm just kind of taking that part out of this game. At the end of the day, this is one of those classic strikers matchups, and in the Pineda fight, it was weird. I picked Pineda, I thought Cub Swanson with the ACL, he wouldn't be the same fighter, but at the end of the day, you kind of knew, well, Pineda's great at grappling, he has some success in the striking, but the majority of the time, his success is in grappling. Cub Swanson's success is in the feet. So at the end of the day, if Swanson could defend the takedowns and force Pineda to become a striker, well, Swanson could win that fight. My issue is that If Kamsuas is going to go out there and try to win a striking fight with Giga Chikadze, I just don't know how he's going to close that distance in a safe way. And I really do think that's the proper way to say it. Kamsuas can close distance on anybody. He's not afraid to take a shot to give two. And we all kind of know and like, everyone loves Kamsuas because of that. There's not a lot of people who you see on Twitter and even who you talk to who like fights who are like, oh, I hate that Cub Swanson guy. Like, he only has exciting fights and he has just like a good personality to go along with it. So Cub Swanson, he's always going to be a player at 145, whether you think he should be a ranked fighter or not. He's just got such a big name that a win over Cub Swanson still does great things for your career. And it's interesting too, right? Because we talked about the level of competition that Cub Swanson has been in there with. It's a lot of great fighters who he's come up short against, where with Giga, it's a lot of just kind of middle tier fighters who he's overperformed against. So we'll be really interesting to see kind of A, what stage both these fighters are at when they do meet, and just what this fight will turn into, because I know I might be speaking for both of us when I say this, I'm more excited for this fight than I am for the co-main event. Like, I'm this excited for this weekend's co-main.
You look at the names that he was supposed to face, and again, Mike Davis pops up a couple of times, Alex Caceres last year, then he fights Omar Morales, then he fights Jamie Simmons. And if you look at it, it's weird, right? Because he gets the performance bonus his last time out. He finishes Jamie Simmons. That was pretty good. Simmons, primary wrestler, smaller guy. Like, he's more bantamweight, exactly. Not so much a featherweight. The knock on Giga, though, is always the output. And if you go look at his fights, the Austin Springer fight that was on Contender Series is weird. Because Giga, the striker, thought it was more like Giga, the striker and grappler. And more so grappler. And he engaged in some of those exchanges with Springer. He ends up getting finished. He went for some weird submissions in that one, too. It was an odd fight. The Brandon Davis fight and the Jamal Emmers fight. Okay, you can harp on him a little bit. But then he started to open up a little bit against Irwin Rivera. And then he started to open up some more against Omar Morales, which was an interesting fight, if we were really being honest with ourselves. And then a month later, he takes a quick one against Jamie Simmons, and we're off to the races. So finally, he gets a big name in Cub Swanson. It's a huge step up from anybody that he's faced in the past. Like, Brandon Davis fought, Zabit Magomedsharipov at one point. Cool for Brandon Davis. It was still Brandon Davis. Like, you know, Omar Morales is a good fighter at 155. But at 145, he kind of depleted himself a little bit. So, if the output's there for Giga, it'll be interesting to see what we get. If we look at the odds for this one, Giga Chikadze opened a minus 121 favorite. He's a minus 139 right now. And the part where it gets interesting is, as we film this, Chikadze was down to a minus 204. And he's a minus 159 right now. So, I was reading off the wrong number. But yeah, he went minus 125 all the way to minus 200, then minus 201, 202, and now he's a minus 159. So the lines changed big time today in favor of Cub Swanson, who sits roughly at a plus 132. A lot of people liking Cub Swanson, or maybe just one. And then if you look at the total Tapology votes, surprised us, it is to you, 1,065 total, 72% going Chikadze, 76% by decision. And I want to comment on that last one for Swanson, because the Crone Gracie fight was weird. Like, none of the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu academies would let Cub Swanson train Jiu-Jitsu for that one.
It's weird.
Oh, we got one over on him. And then they decided to box, and Crone Gracie, not a boxer. Chris Avila got a big one recently, but other than the Diaz brothers, like, out of that camp, I don't think of Crone Gracie as a boxer. And for Cub Swanson, his last time out, again, Pineda was having tons of success with the leg kicks, and then all of a sudden they started to box, and Cub Swanson boxed them up. So it's an interesting fight nonetheless.
It comes down to this for me. There's two fundamental questions I have to ask myself going into this fight. A, can Cub Swanson handle the power of Giga Chikadze? And I don't think Giga's this massive power threat at the division. Like, we talk about his striking, and he's a very, very good striker, but I don't think he hits harder than, like, a Josh Emmett, or I don't think he hits harder than even a Calvin Kattar. I just think he's an extremely technical striker, and when you're as technical as he is, you're going to find the holes in your opponent's defense, and sometimes you're going to put them down, sometimes you're not. I just wouldn't always look at Giga and think, wow, because of his background in striking, I'm always going to expect a knockout. Because, again, in that Jamie Simmons fight, I do think, like, that head kick should knock out pretty much anybody, but Jamie Simmons was not the appropriate opponent to be in there with Giga on that night. And my other question is Giga gonna face the adversity Cub Swanson's gonna make him go through? Because here's the one thing about Cub Swanson, you don't tend to beat him easily. Like, if you beat Cub Swanson, you gotta go through hell to do it, and he's not some guy who's just gonna go out in the first round. So for me, it's how does Giga absorb just the pressure of Cub Swanson, and if Cub Swanson eats the power of Chikadze, will he go down due to it, or are we gonna get one of those vintage Cub Swanson performances where he can basically eat whatever's thrown at him and then respond with two or three shots? I Gotta go with Genghis Kaze at the end of the day, though. We're in the Swanson fight. When you thought about it, okay, if he makes Pineda be a boxer, he can win that fight. If you force Chikadze to strike with you, you're just doing what he wants. And with Swanson, he never was a great wrestler. He's got good trip takedowns. They're kind of similar to Alistair Overeem, if anything, where he kind of rushes towards and tries to get that body to body, and then he can rush around to the back. He does have decent trip takedowns, but he doesn't have one of those collegiate backgrounds that I really can kind of rely upon to get someone like Chikadze down. So at the end of the day, I've got to pick Giga Chikadze.
It's a tricky one. It really is. I mean, for Cub Swanson, again, he's only lost to some of the best, and maybe you don't like Moicano, maybe you're not a huge Shane Burgos fan, but they're still pretty good fighters, especially in this division. It's a tricky one. If you go by the numbers, it's very, very close. I mean, in terms of percentages, you have slight edges in favor of Cub Swanson as far as what he lands, but he absorbs a little bit. The striking defense is about the same. Cub Swanson definitely the more effective in terms of grappling. But I do have a hard time with it. I'm ever so slightly going with the Georgian fighter here. And I think the thing is, that higher work rate. If we do see the higher work rate out of Chikadze, and if we're able to see him kind of circle away from some of the issues that Cub Swanson could kind of pose his way, I think Giga Chikadze has it. But it is tricky. And that live movement, it's got to scare you a little bit.
It does to a certain degree, just in case someone knows something that we don't. But again, at the end of the day, can Swanson knock out Giga Chikadze? Yes, he can. Like, it wouldn't be a surprise at all. Swanson goes in there, lands some overhand right, George Roop style. Shout out to George Roop. That was a great knockout by Swanson. Knock his mouth guard out, and we're all back on the killer Cub train. It's just with Giga, he's such a good counter striker that if Cub really does open up and does get wild with his power, that's when Chikadze is going to find that opening to land with his own shots. But again, I cannot stress just how excited I am for this weekend's co-main event.
Big time fight between Cub Swanson and Giga Chikadze. We're both going with George's own Giga Chikadze to get the win. Can't wait for our main event. You have Dominic Reyes, the former title challenger, taking on the former Ryzen light heavyweight champion Jiří Procházka. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Big time light heavyweight fight in our main event. As always, one half of your host, Sindhu, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. And you should. You can find the channel at Fight Night Picks. And you can find my co-host, Matt, at Matt Allen FNP on the respective socials. Matt, when the pandemic started and we were out of ideas, we decided to do really weird, like, March Madness-style brackets with fighters. It didn't matter what, promotion they were with. We did them all the way up from flyweight to heavyweight. We had a lot of fun with it. And at light heavyweight, if I'm not mistaken, I remember the graphic. It was John Jones and Jiří Procházka. And I feel like they made it all the way to the finals. But if they didn't, they made it pretty damn close. And we were on that Jiří hype train as far as watching Ryzen, going back through the anthology. This guy is such an interesting specimen. He was a Muay Thai champion before he joined MMA. And if you go back and look at the old pictures of Jiří, well, he kind of looks like Matt with a shaved head. Like, he looks like a guy that's kind of squirrely and long and doesn't really belong in MMA, let alone some of these big promotions. And for Jiří Procházka, look at the record. 31 total fights, 27 total wins. What is it, 24 by knockout? 24. It's absolutely insane. And then you look at some of the wins and you might think, okay, well, you know, Darko Stuzic, all right, it is what it is. He lost to King Mo. He'd eventually avenge that one. I went back and watched that one today. King Mo looked pretty old and pretty tired by like the second half of the second round. But still, he beat Fujita, who was old. But then you go through it. I mean, Carl Albrechtsen, that's a quality win. Jake Hewn, the Honey Bear, that's a pretty good win. Brandon Halsey, Bellator vet. Fabio Maldonado was washed. And if you go back and watch that one, Fabio doesn't really offer much of anything. He doesn't shoot for takedowns. He's just pretty content to hold his hands like this and take a paycheck.
I mean, he is a boxer.
But CB Dolloway, on the other hand, that was one where they both kind of went at it. And at the end of it, Jiří knocked him out pretty well cold. And CB got to wear his wrestling shoes. So Jiří Procházka is one of the most interesting cases because for a guy that has a Muay Thai background, he doesn't hold his hands up like this. Sometimes he just holds them down by his waist. And he stands there with his chin out, and he invites you to strike with him.
Okay, we have polar opposite fighters in this respect. Dominic Reyes is still a fighter who's really learning what he's doing on the job. The fact that Dominic Reyes really fought for the title to begin with just kind of tells you how special of an athlete that he is. And don't worry, I'm going to talk to you guys about his athleticism.
He's an athlete.
He is, but that's the weird thing about Dominic Reyes. It's not like he has some background in wrestling or jiu-jitsu or striking that he can really fall upon. Dominic Reyes is just a well-rounded athlete who's good at everything.
Just a football player. fire at heart.
Oh, you gotta stop. So, the great thing about Reyes, though, is the fact that, yes, he does have some of those weird intangibles that we kind of talk about when you talk about other fighters who do have, like, weird backgrounds, like track backgrounds, who have really good cardio. Dominic Reyes, he just is great at kind of everything, but he is somewhat bare bones in his approach and his whole style. He's very big for the weight class, one of the biggest 205ers you'll really find. Just not only with his frame, but his range, too. He's a guy who can keep a very long range from his opponent. But the weird thing about Dominic Reyes is that I kind of liken him to a Dwight Grant. Now, he is Dwight Grant at his highest level. He's like a Super Saiyan Dwight Grant, if you will. But Dominic Reyes has a really weird zone where he has big power and then he has weird power everywhere else. And I don't know at the Jan Blachowicz fight, which is a bad performance from him, but let's just be honest. He got mopped by Jan Blachowicz. And I know Jan Blachowicz is the champ, but he didn't look good in that fight whatsoever. And I think we can talk about two different things. Either A, he burned his gas tank too fast against Jon Jones, and that's what he was worried about in this fight. He thought, okay, if I got the first two rounds off Jones and I got tired in the last three, then okay, if I can somewhat conserve myself against Jan Blachowicz, then maybe I won't have the same fate. Maybe if I pick up the second, you know, fourth and fifth round, I can win a decision or at least just make it more competitive in the later rounds. Or the style of Jan Blachowicz just gave Dominic Reyes problems, and I think that's what it was. Dominic Reyes only has 14 fights, and only 12 of those are wins. When you talk about Jiří Prochazka, we talk about the fact that 24 of his wins are by knockout. He has twice as many knockouts as Dominic Reyes just has wins. And the weird thing about Jiří is it's not like he was getting away scot-free in all of his fights. He's a guy who is somewhat hittable, and yes, you might not love that, but the one thing about Prochazka is that he can get hurt and come back in a fight. I've seen it happen. He can get hit clean, not only get wobbled, get dropped, but he comes back strong. And he is a fighter who you might not like some of his mannerisms in the cage. Yes, he is sort of a showman, if you will, where he does that weird thing where he'll hold his hands, or he will move all weird.
Or he just looks away.
But at the end of the day, when he is the one moving forward with combinations, there's not much you can do. Like, he has crazy hit power in his hands, he has really good hand speed, and he has this weird unorthodox way of striking, which is weird too, because he's a guy who's been striking for his whole life, so you think, okay, so he's gonna be like Adesanya, where it's like his technique's so good it looks unorthodox. No, not really. Like, he does lunge in weird ways to leave him open, but he has had so many MMA fights that I do think there's a method to Jiří Prochazka's madness. I really do. And I think that with his weird way of striking, you have to be one of those lifelong strikers to really pick up on those holes and capitalize on them. I look at a guy like Jan Blachowicz. Does he match up well with a guy like Prochazka? Yeah, he kind of does, just because his style is made up too. Okay, I'm going to pick up on your holes, then I'm going to capitalize on them. With Dominic Reyes, he will just react to a lot of what you're doing, and other than that straight left, I don't know if I love a lot of the other attacks from Dominic Reyes. The bare bones approach of his attack, I do think, is somewhat of a strength, because it's allowed him to pick up on a lot of skills very fast and turn him into a championship, at least challenging fighter. It's just at the end of the day, other than the straight left, other than the jab, and other than a few kicks, I just don't know what other weapons I'm supposed to be worried about from Dominic Reyes if you're in the corner of Jiří Prochazka.
That Jan Blachowicz fight was really the only time that we saw Dominic Reyes really just hit a wall from the start.
Look, it's terrible.
Jan Blachowicz did everything in that fight that Dominic Reyes normally does well. He threw body kicks. He threw kicks to the legs. Sure. He would throw in combination coming up. He threw a nice uppercut. There's two good punches that Dominic Reyes has. He has multiple, but there's really two that he uses. His left straight is great. It looks amazing. It goes right down the pipe, and there's tons and tons of power. If you want to go back and see a good finish with it, it's his UFC debut against Joachim Christensen. You can laugh and say, well, Joachim wasn't that good. Maybe he wasn't.
The Weidman one, same thing.
It was a good win. The Weidman fight, same thing. The other thing he throws really well is his left uppercut, and he throws it really, really fast, and he bends his elbow in such a way that it just kind of pops right up. He can throw it from a little bit of distance, but usually it's in tight. He might grab you a hockey jersey style with this hand, and then bam, he'd get you, like Paul Bissonnette. But then you look at the rest of his career. Jeremy Kimball, we're going to kick a little bit, we're going to take you down, and that transition to the back was kind of crazy. The way that he got it, that was a really good win. I went back and watched the Jared Cannonier fight today. Cannonier's bringing the power and bringing the pressure to Dominic Reyes. Reyes even gets hit by some of the big shots. He withstands it, and he's able to finish Cannonier, drops him, and Cannonier the second time pretty much face planted. That was it. OSP fight, it was a little bit closer. Again, a good decision win over a recognizable opponent. Now, if you want to play MMA math, did he beat Volkan Oezdemir? I don't know, but
I didn't think so at the time.
Jiří Prochazka knocked him out, so again, MMA math if you want to play it. Then he beats Chris Weidman in just straight up a weird fight. Weidman, though, I did like this out of Dominic Reyes. Takes him down, And Weidman gets, or Reyes gets right back to the cage, pops right back up, and then they clinch, and then Reyes ends up finishing the fight. The John Jones fight. A lot of people think that Dominic Reyes won that fight. They thought that he won the first three rounds. I went back and watched it today twice, and I had John Jones winning the second round. Again, he pressured quite a bit.
It's a very close fight, though.
It was a really close fight. Reyes lands, but to me, I had Jones round two, round four, round five, and I had Reyes in one and two. And Reyes won the first round easily, but John Jones kind of looked off, and Reyes looked great. So you got to kind of talk about both sides of that coin. And then in the Jan Blachowicz fight, it was like some of those memes where you listen to Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones, and then it just keeps going, da-na-na-na, because he wasn't really able to get started. The other weird thing, for the John Jones fight, I think he had one, maybe two of his brothers in the corner, but it was an Arrested Development special the last time he saw Dominic Reyes. It was, hey, brother, hey, brother, hey, brother. We had all the Reyes brothers, and yeah, one of them fought in the UFC one time and then had a really weird injury, and we never got to see him again.
Shout out to Alex.
But Dominic is the one that's really carved out the career. So for Dominic, he's coming in on a two-fight losing streak. If it's the Dominic Reyes that we got on the win streak all the way up that was undefeated when he took on John Jones, it's a lot of kicks early. He does a nice job of going to the calf, going to the kind of closer to the knee. He can whip it to the body. Everything you saw Jan Blachowicz do really well against Dominic Reyes, Reyes can usually do stuff like that. He doesn't really pop out much of a jab, which is weird because he's got the type of stance where he's a southpaw, he kind of stands way back, and he keeps his hands up. And it's one of those ones that if Yuri's out there leaning his head into it, maybe you get an uppercut, maybe you get a left straight, maybe you command a little bit of the respect, and the tides totally turn. But again, from Yuri and all of these fights, and I'm talking Hune, Halsey, Kingmo, Maldonado, Dolloway, and Volkan Oezdemir, he does the exact same thing in every single fight, and it rarely even changes. The game plan is pretty much the same. And this is a guy that goes out for like open air hikes in the mountains, and he's doing all kinds of weird stuff.
He's in great shape.
Look at his hair coming into this one. It's kind of wonky. It's something to see. You'll
like
see
if I
it,
shaved everything but this.
You'll see it on Saturday. It's a little different. But for Yuri Prochazka, he is one of the most interesting strikers out there, and it's the type of style that I think can cause a lot of people fits. This is such an interesting fight.
It really is. And this is the problem for Dominic Reyes. When we talk about all of his highlights and the best moments of his career, we talk about a fight that he lost and a fight against really a blown-up middleweight who had never fought at light heavyweight before. Because really, the Chris Weidman fight's the thing that got him the title fight. And yes, you can, however you want to scale Jared Cannonier at light heavyweight, maybe you thought he was good there, maybe you like him a lot more at 185. I know personally I do, but still, it's just, with Reyes, I haven't really seen him beat that upper level of competition and do it convincingly. Like, he had a kind of close fight against OSP till he almost knocked him out in the last second of it with a straight left. But my problem with Reyes, when you see Prochazka get hit, it's what his opponent throws in combination. Even look at Volkan Oezdemir. Volkan Oezdemir couldn't hit him with that first punch, couldn't hit him even with the second punch, because the head movement of Prochazka is pretty good. I know he likes to play around and do a lot of that stuff, but he is good with it. Like, he does that for a reason. Think about Alistair Overeem before he started getting knocked out a lot, like, the third time. He knew he had a bad chin, and he kind of used that as bait, almost, to get people to really overextend with their shots, and then he could counter them effectively. I do think Prochazka, it's not like he's as fragile as, you know, late career Alistair Overeem, but he's a very high level striker, and I do think that those tricks and traps that he sets on the feet are going to be stuff that Dominic Reyes falls for. With Reyes, it sucks, because in boxing, if you had a guy who fought for a title and then lost another fight for a title, he fights someone so far out of the rankings you probably never heard of them, and honestly, you probably just went to high school with that person. Like, they don't give them another upper echelon fight. They let that person's skill set kind of go back down to basic, and then you can build upon, you know, the positives that were already there. You don't give him the fifth ranked fighter in the world off of a two-fight losing streak. So for me, just the UFC isn't doing Dominic Reyes any favors in a fight that stylistically, I don't think he's going to win. So I do think Prochazka is going to be able to get it done. I like his power on the feet. I do like his movement on the feet. I know we kind of talked to that a little bit as a negative, but against a guy like Reyes, I do think he'll be able to capitalize on his one-shot selection. Again, if Reyes lands that one shot, probably going to be a straight left, and it probably will hurt Prochazka. But again, it's a lot easier to rely on the, I'm going to say well-rounded, but I'll just say the more expanded skill set of Prochazka, especially on the feet, than Dominic Reyes in this fight. But I'll be honest, this fight I'm really looking forward to.
Tricky, tricky fight. In terms of the odds, they've stayed about the same since they opened. Reyes a plus 110 underdog, Prochazka about a plus, or sorry, a minus 130, 135 or thereabouts. Over on Topology, you have 1,090 total votes, 73% with Prohaska, 91% by knockout. For the 27% that have Reyes, you have 66% by knockout. So a lot of fans thinking there's probably going to be a finish in this fight. And yeah, I like Denisa in this fight from Czech Republic. I think Jiří Prohaska, again, he's one of those guys that sets up a lot of traps with a lot of different feints. For Dominic Reyes, he's usually moving forward. He usually moves in on a line. And you can kind of, if you can figure him out, and it's not easy. Trust me. I mean, John Jones felt like he was kind of testing the waters in the first round, but even he struggled. Like, Dominic Reyes had the fight of his life in that fight. So kudos to him. He's making it further in fighting than I'll ever make it. But this is a really tricky one. And yeah, have we seen Jiří Prohaska struggle against a wrestler? Yeah, I mean, the first King Mo fight.
Here's the thing. You keep on bringing that up. Prohaska's only 28. He fought King Mo when he was 23 years old. So that would be like me getting ready to fight King Mo in 1 year. Like, it's not that big of a deal to have a loss against a guy who is very experienced and who's already been there and done that throughout his career. I don't look at that loss as a really big dark spot on Prohaska's career, especially the fact that he came back and beat him in the rematch. If anything, and I know this is overplayed in MMA, you win or you learn. And I do understand in the King Mo fight, he did kind of wait and age King Mo out at a certain point. But in MMA, that's the great thing about this sport. You can lose and get better because of it, and I really do think for Prohaska, that was one of those opportunities. For Reyes, that's the last thing I want to touch on. We talked about Prohaska. He can lose a fight and then come back in it. With Dominic Reyes, when things don't start going his way, when the rope does start to get pulled the other way, he does have a hard time bringing things back. Once things start going against him, they do start to pile on. Even think of the John Jones fight. No matter how you scored that second round, it was Dominic Reyes starts the fight very strong. But once John Jones starts to have success, and once he is starting to download that game plan of Reyes, then you start to see him just have more success and more success and more success as that fight goes on. Same thing with Blachowicz. He's landing in the openings in the first round, and then as the second round progresses, those openings just keep on getting bigger and bigger. It's just an overall thing. I haven't seen it yet out of Reyes. So maybe if he gets dropped in this fight and comes back, he's going to show me something I haven't seen. It's just he has yet to show me the ability to come back in a fight yet, and that is something that concerns me.
1,800 total votes in the YouTube community tab for Fight Night Picks. 55% Prohaska, 45% Reyes. Let us know down below in the comment section who you're going with in this fight, but we both have Jiří Prohaska to get the win. I'm really looking forward to it. Wild week in MMA. There's so many different cards going on, so make sure you check something out. But with Fight Night Picks over on Saturday, we're going to have question mark kicks. You're not going to want to miss that. We offer up our final previews and predictions. So keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it.